brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show on this Monday, October 26, 2015. I'm David Knight, your host. We have a host of news. We have the IRS now having their own Stingray cell phones. This has been something that's been done by a lot of different agencies. And of course, whenever they do it secretly because they don't want the citizens to know about it. I remember we had a story about a year and a half ago. There was a local police department had used Stingray to illegally search people without a warrant. And of course, Stingray is an electronic device whereby they can grab your cell phone location and other information without getting a search warrant. And they're not supposed to do that. They had a situation where they had apprehended someone who was involved in alleged theft. And when he came before the judge said, well, how did you acquire this information? And they said, well, we can't tell you, Judge. We have a non-disclosure agreement. And he said, you don't have a non-disclosure agreement with me. He said, how did you get this information? So they huddled together and they said, never mind. We're going to drop the charges. They've done everything they can to try to hide this illegal snooping using Stingray. Now we find out that the 13th agency, we've had 12 different agencies that have been exposed to be doing this. The 13th agency is now the IRS doing this. Yes, it is total information awareness, total surveillance by every bureaucracy you can imagine. All of them arming themselves with weapons, all of them arming themselves with listening devices to spy upon you. That's the kind of government we're looking at right now. So we're going to break into what's going on with that. And of course, just this last week, the end of last week, they passed CISA, the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act. This is something that is supposed to allow them to provide legal protection for corporations who turn over information to them because they don't want to give the corporations any excuse to deny turning this information over to them. So they're going to say, don't worry, you're protected, but you better turn it over. It's also a way of giving legal protection and legal cover to something that's been going on for quite a while. We see a lot of tech companies, a lot of them who have been collaborators, quislings for the surveillance state, saying, oh, we don't want to do this, when in reality they really want the liability protection is really all that they want. But there are some who really don't want to do it. And that has been one of the issues that they've been able to use, saying, if we were to do this, we would be betraying the privacy concerns of our customers. But this is how the government has been rolling this out for quite some time, saying that the information that the phone company collects, that your internet service provider collects, that anybody that you deal with, anyone that collects any information on you, that's no longer your information. So turn it over because you don't want us to play rough with you if you're the phone company. You know, we give you a monopoly, a nice lucrative monopoly. We're going to look at some Minority Report pre-crime ways that this information is being used. If you don't think that it's really going to be used against Americans, understand, of course, it already is. We just had the IRS given a free rein by the Department of Justice, quote unquote, this last week, saying that there wasn't any malice with this. There wasn't any political targeting of this. Of course there was. If there wasn't any malice or political targeting, it would have been done across the political spectrum. It wasn't. It was focused on conservative groups. And they said, this isn't happening. Well, it is still going on. There are still Tea Party organizations that have had their paperwork held up for years. Many of them have still not gotten that information. We're also going to cover some information about what's going on with Paul Rhino, the person who seems to be the choice for the next Speaker of the House, someone who is going to be able to work with Obama, be acceptable to John Boehner because he's going to give them everything that they want. We're going to take a look at that. Also, some news on open borders and what it tells us about the collapsing globalist socialist state. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show on this Monday, October 26, 2015. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to be talking in the third hour to Zoltan István. He is a candidate for presidency with the Transhumanist Party, a party that he created. So we're going to talk to him about his goals for transhumanism, what he thinks that's about. Should be an interesting interview. He's going to be here live in the studio, third hour. Before we get to that, I want to talk about the out-of-control use of technology by our government. Now, of course, we learned last week, at the end of the week, that the Department of Justice was not going to target Lois Lerner. Maybe it's because they think that she's related to a girlfriend of Superman. I don't know. But it looks like she's got more powerful friends than Superman. She's got powerful people in the government. And we were told at the time that, you know, it was just bureaucratic incompetence. Well, if it was bureaucratic incompetence, it would affect groups equally across the political spectrum. This was targeted on conservative groups, on Tea Party groups. And now we learn that they are still targeting Tea Party groups. This isn't something that has gone on, that has stopped. The Washington Times reports that the IRS is still holding up the nonprofit applications for Tea Party groups, including one that has been waiting nearly 6 years for approval. As I say, it's no wonder so many Americans have had it with Washington and the elite political class who can get away with something like this, says Mark Meckler, president of the Citizens for Self-Governance, one of the organizers of the class action lawsuit. Yet another case is pending before a federal appeals court after Tea Party challengers lost at the district court level, where the judge ruled that the IRS targeting stopped in 2013, so there was no longer a case to be decided. And yet, that's not the case. They say that was news that it's stopped 2 years ago. That's news to the Albuquerque Tea Party, which applied for nonprofit status back in December of 2009 and is still waiting for approval. And also another one of the center's clients, Unite in Action, an Ohio group, has been waiting for more than 3 years for approval. So one is in New Mexico, another one is in Ohio, but of course there's no coordination by the central offices of the IRS. That's precisely what was going on. We all know what's going on. And we all know that the people in power continually get away with committing crimes because simply they are in power. Jay Sekulow, one of the chief counsels for the American Center for Law and Justice that is challenging this, says it's an outrage, a mockery of justice. Yes, it's a mockery of the rule of law. And it's something that we have come to see everywhere. Look at this article from The Guardian. Not only is the IRS targeting Tea Party groups and getting away with it, but now they're acquiring Stingray cell phone surveillance gear. Actually, this has been going on for quite some time. Going back to the time when they were holding up, guess what? Tax status for Tea Party groups. Going back to the same years, 2009, 2012, under the Freedom of Information Act, they have found, this is a Guardian investigation, they found documents for purchases made 6 years ago when they started this targeting of the Tea Party. They also started collecting Stingray devices, as I mentioned in the last segment. This is something that the FBI has worked very hard to keep quiet. Many law enforcement agencies will tell the judge they have a non-disclosure agreement and they will refuse to reveal how they got this information if the judge challenges them and says, where's your search warrant? Well, you know, I just have the stuff. But of course, there's other ways that they can do this. We know that for many years, the Drug Enforcement Agency and others have illegally collected information. The NSA would collect information illegally, pass it to the DEA. They would use parallel construction to pretend that they had acquired this with a search warrant. But now they're not really even bothering with that beard. They just go out and violate the law with impunity. And it's going to get worse. And we'll tell you how it's going to get worse. But first, this situation. They say privacy advocates say the revelation, quote, shows the wide proliferation of this very invasive surveillance technology. Despite their extensive capabilities in these Stingray devices, they require only a low-level court order called a PIN register. It's also known as a trap and trace in order to grant permission for their use. Very similar to what's going on with the NSA when they say that they're going to, they get this massive broad search warrant, as Rand Paul put it, going before the FISA court and saying, I want a search warrant for Mr. and Mrs. Verizon. In which case, the FISA court says, sure, you can listen to anybody that has a Verizon account. Oh, I'd like one for Mr. and Mrs. AT&T as well. Yeah, no problem. Sure. No problem with that. We can do dragnet surveillance of everybody in the United States. And it's going to get worse. I'll tell you about that in just a moment. Various revelations by the ACLU and other news outlets, including The Guardian, have shown at least 12 federal agencies already known to have these devices, including the NSA, the FBI. Now the IRS makes 13. A baker's dozen. Yes, they harass our people and they eat out their substance. That's the nature of government if it's not controlled. Government is always either at your feet or at your throat. Let me ask you. Do you think it's at your feet? No, it's not. So where are they going next with this? Well, the next thing that they're doing is greasing the skids, giving themselves some legal cover, saying that they're going to pass CISA. This is something that they've tried for multiple times. They called it CISPA, and now it is called CISA, and they're getting it through. Nothing has really changed except dropping the P for protection. This is the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act. It used to be the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Protection Act. And I guess maybe people said, well, who's getting protected by this? Because this isn't something that is increasing the protection of individuals. You're spying on us. You're collecting our information. It's like, oh, well, it's there. The P is there to protect companies from being sued by you when they violate your privacy. You know, that other P word that they don't like, that P word that's getting banned by the government. This has now been passed by the Senate. They just need to reconcile it with the House. Obama has indicated that he will sign it. Of course he will. He will not shy away from any kind of surveillance. He said we would have the most transparent administration we had ever seen. That's what Obama told everybody. Little did you realize that the transparency was going to be on you, not on him. Everything they do is a secret. We have a state religion of national security. Everything is sacrificed to it. Your privacy, the rule of law, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. But they will not tell you anything about what they're doing. We've had this trade agreement. I think that was now 3 weeks ago. They announced that they had come up with this agreement. We were told for a very long time that the corporations and the corporate lobbyists who are working on this trade partnership, quote unquote, it's a treaty. We were told that they couldn't tell us about this because that would just scotch the whole deal. You know, you can't go public as this thing is being negotiated. We'll let you know once it's negotiated. Well, here we are 3 weeks later, maybe four. I don't know the exact date, but it's been at least 3 weeks. We still don't have any information from our corporate masters as to what they're about to do. We do know that it's going to be far more than free trade. It is going to reorganize copyright. It's going to reorganize national sovereignty. It is going to elevate corporations to the level of government, which, of course, they are, aren't they? If they can tell our congressmen and senators that they cannot talk about what's going on with this agreement because they have to sign a non-disclosure agreement, there's that non-disclosure agreement again, right? NDAs all over the place because we're operating in a corporate environment now. We don't have a government anymore. We have a multinational corporations are running this government, so they deal on non-disclosure agreements, and everything that they do is secret. They say, although CISA is branded a cybersecurity bill, this is from InfoWorld, and of course, this is a tech organization. This is not a political organization. This is a technical organization, InfoWorld. They say, although CISA is branded a cybersecurity bill, it does nothing to actually improve the effectiveness of security systems. This is people who understand computers telling you this. It's concerned instead with increasing the amount of information that corporations share with government and protecting those companies from liability for violating a customer's privacy. Yeah, again, like I said, it's going to legitimize it, but it will also put pressure on some of the companies that have been reluctant to turn this over, saying we would experience legal issues. We would be sued by customers if we do this because they didn't want to turn that information over. They didn't want to violate your privacy. Now the government will use CISA as a club against these holdouts, telling them, no, you don't have any liability, so you don't have any reason not to give that information to me, hand it over. That's the way they're going to use this. And of course, they point out that the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, CISPA, was introduced back in 2011. It failed. It was reintroduced in 2013. It was failed again. Last year, any mention of protection was stripped out, and they have now pushed this thing through. And, of course, Aaron Schwartz worked very hard to defeat that. I would say that he gave his life to defeat that. I don't believe that he killed himself in desperation. That's the official narrative from the government. People who knew him said they were absolutely blindsided by this. How many times do we have to have someone that the government tells us committed suicide in prison or whatever? How many times does that have to happen? And they're all saying, hey, I'm fine. I'm fighting this to the end, blah, blah, blah. And everybody that they know says they were well-adjusted. They were a fighter. They were going after this. And then all of a sudden, they commit suicide. You know, like Gary Webb or the DC Madam or so many different people that we've talked to. And of course, Aaron Swartz was a fighter. He picked this fight with them. He wasn't shying away from this. And although you had a prosecutor, interestingly enough, the same prosecutor, Carmen Ortiz, who was involved in the subsequent Boston bombing false flag, even though Carmen Ortiz was pushing him and publicly saying that they were going to try to put him in prison for 35 years, the charges had been dropped by the university. The charges had been dropped at the local level. They said that's not anything. He had removed some data. It wasn't any kind of a cyber hack or anything, but the feds came in and tried to make an issue out of it. And she got a lot of pushback because she was trying to prosecute him. Her husband tweeted and said, don't push back on Carmen. She offered him a 3-month plea bargain and he turned it down. That tweet was subsequently deleted. I don't think he committed suicide. And now we have CISA, because one person can make a difference. That's why they take them out. Stay with us. We're going to tell you what Julian Assange says to do next, and that is use snail mail. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. We've had a NSA lawsuit that you will not believe. I mean, this is something straight out of a Kafka novel. I'll tell you about that in just a moment. I want to let you know first about the specials we have at InfoWars Life. We have 15% off of Ancient Defense for a limited time. We have 10% off the complete InfoWars Select Storable Food line, along with free shipping. Let me tell you about the storable food. This is something that's made in the United States. Even the packaging, it's high-quality packaging that will let this food last for 25 years. Military-grade barrier against light, oxygen, and moisture entering the pouches. It's resealable after you open it. It's truly the lowest price we can give you under this contract with a manufacturer for the highest quality storable food that we know of. Again, that's 10% off the food itself and free shipping. That's a huge saving. With the promo code FOOD at checkout, you get 10% off. Again, you can find that at InfoWarsStore.com right now. Use promo code FOOD at checkout for 10% off your purchase of InfoWars Select Storable Food and for free shipping. Let's go back to what's happening with our never-ending, always metastasizing cancer of a surveillance state here. Here's a lawsuit that's just been dismissed. It's from this Wikimedia versus the NSA. It's a lawsuit that's been dismissed by the judge. And listen to the reason that it was dismissed. Because they couldn't prove that they were being surveilled. Secretly. I mean, seriously. This is straight out of a Kafka novel. He says, well, you know, you have no way of knowing if we're secretly spying on you. So I'm not going to entertain this lawsuit. I mean, that's seriously what the judge is saying. They say plaintiffs can only speculate that they are being spied upon by the NSA. So I'm not going to allow you to do any discovery or do a lawsuit. And he says, and for one thing, here's another thing he says. Plaintiffs insist that Wikipedia's over 1 trillion annual internet communications are significant in volume. And then the judge goes on to say, but 1 trillion is clearly a large number, but size is always relative. For example, $1 trillion are enormous value. Well, maybe not to the federal government. But he says, whereas 1 trillion grains of sand are but a small patch of a beach. It's like, what? What is he talking about? Here you got a judge arguing about how many angels fit on the head of a pen and using that as justification. It is nothing but sophistry and obfuscation. We all know what they're doing. We all know that they are watching people. But he says, because you can't prove that you're being watched. I mean, there's, you know, documents that have been released and, you know, we've had leaks of documents. We've had NSA whistleblowers testifying that you're doing this. But, you know, you can't prove it. And so you have to prove it before you get your day in court. That's essentially the kind of Kafka world that we live in. Absolutely amazing. So Julian Assange is now telling journalists, he says, you need to go back to the old methods. You need to use snail mail, traditional post office services. Well, you know, that is true. I mean, it is not as vulnerable as email. But of course, one of the reasons that the government has always run the post office system in the first place is because they wanted to use that as a crude level of intelligence gathering. They can put a postal cover on you and they can keep a record of everybody that you send mail to and everybody that sends mail to you. They don't have to get a search warrant for that. That's where this all started. Started with that, started with these pen registers for the phone companies, and now this is just metastasizing into full-blown Orwellian police state, a Stasi state. But he points out, he says, my recommendation for people who don't have 10 years experience in cryptography is to return to old methods and use traditional postal services, Julian Assange said in an interview that was published on Saturday. And you need to understand that they're always watching you, and he has warned people about that. He's warned people about what they put on Facebook. He says, you know, Facebook is basically your friends testifying against you, have you in the dock. I don't remember the exact quote that he had, but he was warning everybody about social media, especially. Look at this incredibly ridiculous decision from a local judge. A judge says that a small school's Facebook post was actually a campaign contribution. This is a state judge. He ruled that a Facebook post by a school called Liberty Commons amounted to an illegal campaign contribution to a school district board candidate. The charter school shared on its Facebook with its Facebook followers a newspaper article about the parent of one of the students who is running for a school board seat in the neighboring school district. Now, this school has 566 followers on its Facebook page. It was then shared by a former congressman who lost his reelection bid in 2004, and he has 3,900 friends. The administrative law judge called the violation minor, and he ruled that no government money or any significant amount was spent to make the contribution. But he also said that it was giving of a thing of value to a candidate, namely favorable publicity. Do you understand the dangerous precedents on free speech that that represents? The University of Colorado law professor Scott Moss did. He says, I don't buy under the First Amendment speech can be deemed as a contribution. He says this judge has a Grandpa Simpson understanding of the law and of email. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. We're going to talk about the failures, the design failures of Obamacare, and some amazing new information about people getting fined who have small companies and are just trying to help their employees with some health care expenses, and the fines that they're going to be facing, they're far worse than not participating in Obamacare in the first place. It's absolutely amazing how they are focusing on people. But before we do, I want to continue on with this Facebook. I was just talking about this judge who said that posting information about somebody's candidacy on Facebook was a campaign contribution. I want you to think about that. Think about how dangerous that is. Think about how that is going to silence our freedom of speech. You know, quite frankly, that's one of the problems that I have with campaign finance control. I understand that we have corporations that are buying the election, of course. They're buying the trade treaties. They're buying everything. The corporations run the government. Nevertheless, when they enact campaign prohibitions, that's going to fall on the smaller people. You understand, of course, don't you, that the government multinational corporations will make sure that they have loopholes written for them. They will know how they can get around these loopholes. This is going to be a spider's web that is going to catch the small flies and gnats, but the great big bumblebees are going to go right through it. And that's what we have to be worried about if you've got idiotic judges like this local judge saying that a Facebook post is a campaign contribution. But of course, it can also be something that's very dangerous. Look at this story out of Egypt. And of course, this is our close ally in Egypt. We just have news of a guy who is going to get 3 years in jail for simply putting Mickey Mouse ears behind, photoshopping them, putting Mickey Mouse ears behind a picture of the president Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. You know, I guess having a name like el-Sisi makes you extremely sensitive to any mocking. And take a look at that picture if you're watching this broadcast. There he is. And as they say, that picture should go viral. That picture should be shared by everyone all over social media. He was charged with, quote, attempting to overthrow the regime for putting Mickey Mouse ears on him and getting 3 years in jail. And you just have to understand that as ridiculous as this may seem to us now, understand that all of the political correctness, shaming that's going on social media, as they're moving towards this, understand that they are preparing us in the West for this kind of censorship. That's what's fundamentally behind all of this, these shaming campaigns, all of this political correctness. Again, we were talking about the IRS investing in Stingray devices to watch people. Of course, now the FBI director has come out and said that cell phone cameras are to blame for the rise in hostile relationships between the police and the public. There you go. Shoot the messenger. In this case, the iPhones. Okay? It's not that they're spying on us. It's not that they're beating us. No, no. You know, actually, he ought to take this and turn it around the other way as well. Perhaps their constant surveillance is creating a kind of minority report pre-crime environment where they single people out. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But of course, the FBI director's name is James Comey, and he is now saying cell phone cameras are poisoning the relationship. They're not going to do anything to change the shoot first, brutal instructions that are coming out of Washington that are taking over our local law enforcement, making them not accountable to local citizens. No, they're not going to change any of that. Instead, they're going to complain about cell phones, and that is going to have the logical result. If he can keep this narrative going, of course, they will ban cell phones or put some kind of a restriction on cell phones that when the police are doing their work, they can flip a switch and you won't be able to record or transmit what's going on. That's where this is really headed. But it was interesting when they put this up on the Daily Mail, about three bullet points down, they say, of course, his name is James Comey. They say, comedy blames the YouTube effect. They put his name in as comedy. And maybe that's what we ought to do. Maybe we ought to ridicule him and laugh at him like this Egyptian dictator with the Mickey Mouse ears. Maybe we ought to start calling this FBI director James Comedy if he's going to tell us that cell phone cameras are the problems with the way the police are interacting with people. He truly is a James Comedy. Here's where this is all headed. And just like I said, you know, maybe they ought to think about the fact that their constant surveillance is causing them to overreact. Maybe that's the problem. Here's an example of this. We got a Minority Report pre-crime in New Hampshire, a teen arrested after he just parked in a predictive hotspot for crime. This is an 18-year-old man. He was arrested in Manchester, New Hampshire. A police officer scoped him out for parking within a, quote, predictive hotspot for crime. In other words, they say, well, this area is going to be a high crime area. And they made sure it was a high crime area, except in this case, it was the police committing the crimes. On October 20th, Connor DeLeer was sitting by himself in his parked 2000 Honda Accord. And he was in an area, as I said, a hotspot deemed by computer programs. You see, this is where we're going to be heading. We're going to have computer programs and algorithms that are going to flag you. And we've already seen this with spy cameras that are hooked up to predictive software, flagging someone who was changing a flat tire. They thought he was involved in car theft because he stood by the car, then he disappeared. They couldn't see him in the camera. So what do? Well, they call the SWAT team out against this guy who had a flat tire. Now, in that particular case, it turned out okay. In this case I'm telling you about here, though, it did not turn out okay. He was parked at 5:35. The cop thought that looked suspicious. Fine. So he circles around. He blocks the path of the car with his squad car and then gets out and starts to question the individual, at which point this individual gets nervous. And the officer says he attempted to provide a legitimate reason for being in the area. Why should he have to provide a legitimate reason for being in the area? The cop could sit there and watch him if he wanted to see if he's going to commit a crime. Perhaps his presence might deter a crime if this guy was going to commit a crime. But he doesn't need to have a legitimate area. He doesn't need to justify being in an area to the police. Nevertheless, the cop ordered him out of the car. Shortly after that, a second officer arrived. Then they noticed that he had a holstered Beretta 9mm handgun. They removed it, put it inside of his vehicle, but they confirmed that his gun was properly permitted and registered. Now they want to inspect his car. They say he grew agitated. He stated he was not allowing a search of his person or his property. In other words, he's going to stand on his constitutional rights. You want to search my car? Go to a judge. Get a warrant. Well, they didn't want to do that. So they advised him that they were conducting a pat-down search to ensure their safety. So now they're afraid. After they engage this guy for just sitting in his car, after they get him out of his car, now they're concerned because there's two of them and one of him. They're concerned for their safety. So then they find an object in his pocket. And, of course, it is a loaded magazine that is just sitting there waiting to go off in his pocket. They take that out, put it on the top of the car, and continue the search. And then they say he was transitioned to the ground before being pepper sprayed and tasered by newly arriving backup officers. Now, the interesting thing about this is that somebody on a Reddit discussion put this up and said, wow, I can comment on this. This literally happened outside my window. I went to the window for a smoke as two officers had him bent over the car, trying to put handcuffs on him. He was asking them over and over again, what have I done wrong? They got tired of him, not letting them put the handcuffs on. They put him on the sidewalk face down, trying to strong arm the cuffs on. Finally, they call for backup. He's just trying to keep one arm away from him and asking, what did I do wrong? Just tell me, what did I do wrong? Suddenly, he says, my street was swarmed with cops. One guy ran up with like a taser in his hand, zapped him while he's on the ground. He had like five guys holding him down. They got the cuffs on him. They threw him in a paddy wagon. When I saw him get up, he had a huge cut on his forehead, I assume, because one of the cops was grinding his face into the ground with his knee. I didn't know they pepper sprayed him. I didn't see that, he says. But he said they didn't tow his car. They just left it in the area. He said, I had no idea they arrested him for just being around here. WTF, he says. Yeah. Why would that happen? Well, here's another one for you, okay? You think, well, gee, I guess he had it coming because he's parked in an area that they have identified as a hotspot. Well, here's some people attending a Breitbart News-sponsored event in Scottsdale, Arizona. And they get the police, helicopters with spotlights, a massive police presence turnout because they are having an event in a local sports bar. They go to the sports bar. They have a speech that's going on by one of the Breitbart people talking about conservative issues, the U.S. Constitution, the Second Amendment, securing the porous U.S. border, they say. Suddenly, one or two people complain to the establishment's management, and shortly after that, they cut the microphones, and the volume of the televisions was turned up. And then multiple police showed up. They said there's no confrontations, no shoutings, no yellings, no fightings, no disagreement, no disturbing the peace, absolutely nothing. He says the police were completely professional, courteous, but seemed somewhat surprised that they were there, but said it was reported by the group that we had been unruly. He says, as an attendee of the event, I and everyone else in attendance can tell you that we were not unruly. They believed that it was the subject of what was being talked about. And this is what you need to be concerned about. The fact that we live in a Stasi snitch state. Somebody see something, they say something. If they're offended by something, they report you to the police. And fortunately, nothing happened. Nobody got injured in this particular case. But that is the way this is going down multiple times. I want to talk to you about Obamacare. And as I pointed out, this amazing new regulation and also the fraud that has been discovered in it. Very quickly, though, I want to let you know that we have 15% off of Ancient Defense for a limited time. And again, we have the 10% off of InfoWars select storable food and free shipping. Let me tell you about Ancient Defense. Seasons are changing. It's time to start reinforcing your body's natural defenses. To help you get started, we're giving you 15% off the highly rated Ancient Defense herbal immunity formulation at InfoWarsLife.com. Again, you can get that at InfoWarsLife.com, 15% off of Ancient Defense. Now, the other day, and get this clip up from Bernie Sanders, guys. Let's play this one where he talks about the guys being poets down in Nicaragua. Bernie Sandernista, and I call him that because he was talking 30 years ago, just like, you know, Back to the Future, kind of like Doc from Back to the Future, except back 30 years ago, he was praising the Sandinistas. He was praising them. He said, yeah, these guys aren't political hacks. No, no, they're like hippies. They're poets. They got Vermont connections. You know, they're kind of just like me. You guys got that clip ready? Let's roll that clip.
I was impressed by Father Descoto, and he is a very gentle, very loving man. He's familiar with Burlington, Vermont. He had a niece who graduated.
Yeah, he's like me.
From St. Michael's College, actually, who is now working for the government of Nicaragua. Ortega is an impressive guy.
He's an impressive guy.
Ernesto Cardinal is a funny-looking guy. He's gray hair, and he really does remind you of the hippie. I mean, Ernesto, and in fact...
He's kind of like me.
You know, we talked... He's very strongly into poetry. He is very proud of the fact that they are now teaching poetry not only to peasants and to workers, but in the military, in the police department. A very impressive guy.
Yeah, the peasants, the military, you know, they got their own little Maoist cultural revolution going on down there. It's great. And these guys look like me, you know, they're hippies. They got, you know, long white hair, connections to Vermont. They're not political hacks. See, he's caught up in identity politics. He's caught up in the left-right paradigm. He loved the Sandinistas, Bernie Sandinista did. He loved them because he opposed the American government policy of overthrowing whatever countries they want to overthrow. And I agree with him. I agree that Iran-Contra was a horrible thing. I agree that the smuggling of crack cocaine by the CIA to fund the Contras into L.A. was a horrible thing. I don't think we should be overthrowing other countries. But that doesn't mean that the Sandinistas were good guys, Bernie. See, that's what happens when you get caught up in the left-right paradigm, when you get into this either-or mentality. And he hasn't learned anything in the last 30 years. As I pointed out when I talked about this before, he hasn't learned about what happened with Daniel Ortega. Daniel Ortega, who was so thoroughly corrupt, he was thrown out by a coalition of conservatives and communists. He was a kleptocrat. He was somebody who had confiscated billions of dollars of private property, and just before he left, he made it private again. He made it his property. That's the kind of guy that Daniel Ortega is. But, of course, Bernie Sanders was taken in by it because he bought into, well, if Reagan is against him, I'm for him. And besides that, you know, he looks like me, you know, and he's got, even here, the rhetoric, you know, the peasants and the poets. I mean, the peasants and the serfs or whatever. I mean, he's got this class warfare Marxist rhetoric that comes from Bernie Sanders. But it's okay because he's got the police and the military learning poetry too. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? They're all a bunch of poets. So I had a lot of people when I talked about this before, they said, you know, why are you picking on Bernie Sanders? Why are you picking on the failed socialist states in Central America? You know, like Nicaragua and Venezuela, where the bankers get 700% on their investments. In Venezuela, communist Venezuela, Hugo Chavez gives the bankers 700% on their investments, but the people there can't get food, medicine, or water. They have to go elsewhere to get that. So they said, why are you picking on that? You know, why don't you always ignore the successes of socialism, you know, like Sweden. Okay, well, let's talk about Sweden. Sweden needs to borrow more. They need to cut their costs in order to meet refugee numbers, says their finance minister. Open borders, entitlements, the socialist state, either one of those things will destroy a country. But you put them both together and you start sailing over the cliff like Thelma and Louise, okay? And that's what's happening. That was what Cloward and Piven strategized about back in the 1960s. They said, you know, we just aren't getting there quickly enough. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to destroy the society so we can rebuild our socialist utopia. How do we do that? Well, we ramp up the entitlement state and then we ramp up the number of people that are going to be on the entitlement state. So now we can see what's happening in Sweden. You don't see this kind of thing happening in Central and South America simply because Sweden and the European states of Germany and others were so rich to start with. It didn't take very long for socialism to collapse in Central and South America. Even after they confiscate billions of dollars of wealth from other people, they still couldn't make it go that long. As Margaret Thatcher said, the problem with socialism is you eventually run out of other people's money. Well, they didn't have that much of it to start with in Central America, so you saw the results right away, but now we're starting to see the results in Sweden. So we had this story back on the 23rd. Sweden will need to borrow more money, cut costs across the board to meet the expense of record numbers of asylum seekers arriving in the country, said the finance minister. Then we had another one that was a couple of days earlier. Kurt Nemo pointed out that Sweden was on the verge of collapse as illegal immigrants surged into the country. The anti-immigration party is now the largest in the Scandinavian nation. And he points out, and this is a quote from a Danish historian, says, the final consequence of the West and above all Sweden's immigration policy is that the economy will collapse because who is going to pay for it all? And economic breakdowns, once they happen, always happen very quickly. Increasing taxes, he said, on wage earners in Sweden to pay for the influx of illegal immigrants is not enough. The finance minister said, of course, they're going to borrow this. They said, why has one government after another chosen to spend Swedish taxpayers' money to support and shelter citizens of other countries while some of them are trying to kill us? Precisely. When we come back, we're going to break down how that looks in America with Obamacare. We'll be right back.
No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. In our third hour, we're going to be talking to a transhumanist who is actually going to be running for president with his own transhumanist party. He's going to be here live in the studio. His name is Zoltan Istvan. So that should be an interesting third hour. Again, I want to go back to what's going on in Europe. And again, it's Sweden, Germany, these wealthy countries that are rapidly declining into poverty as well as anarchy. We have an article today on Infowars.com, Sweden to house immigrants in Lapland ski resort while their own citizens suffer under a housing shortage. As Paul Joseph Watson writes, migrants traveling to the welfare haven of Sweden will be housed in the ski resort. The citizens will labor under the burden of a housing shortage. He points out that the spa will offer spa treatments, massages, a swimming pool, a bubble bath, a sauna, as well as a spectacular mountain view of its bedrooms. And the migrants will be allowed to stay at this resort until February. Meanwhile, as they're enjoying these amenities, Swedish citizens continue to be burdened by a housing shortage, exacerbated by the large number of immigrants the country is taking in each year. Some politicians are also urging citizens to give up their garages in order to house third world immigrants. Now, when they do that to us, do you think that'll be a violation of the Third Amendment? I mean, they're not troops, but I guess you could call them troops because they're kind of marching in like an army. Look at this picture that we've got from the Daily Mail of a march into Western Europe. Shocking pictures show thousands of determined men, women, and children trudging across the Balkans as politicians warn that the EU could collapse in weeks. Look at that. Are those the troops of the New World Order? The troops that have been brought in to collapse and reorganize society? The troops that have been brought in to destroy the wealth and the independent sovereignty of the West so that they can have their globalist way? Because, of course, that's the only thing that is standing in the way of the globalists are the nations of, or that stood in their way, the nations of Europe and America. And, of course, we see that in Sweden, one of the other aspects of this is a aspect of cultural shock, they say. This is the article from Kurt Nemo. He says, cultural shock in Western countries where there are significant Muslim immigration is the crime rate, especially the disproportional sexual crimes against the host country's women. In Sweden, which does not usually report the nationality of rapists, a just-released study by Swedish police revealed that Muslim men who constitute only 2% of the population are responsible for 78% of the rapes. Once peaceful Sweden has the highest rape rate in Europe, the second highest in the world, next to South Africa. And it's not just Sweden. It's not just Germany. It's also Copenhagen. There's a Muslim mob attacking a police car at a Shiite festival where the Shiites hit the fan. And you can see the video of that on this particular article. Let's see, who is this by? This is the Gateway Pundit. Listen to this clip from RT that we've got. This is a guy named Jonathan Pye, and he's talking about what it costs to rent a room, a little cupboard under the stairs in London.
I mean, economics to me is, can I afford a house? Can I afford to buy a house? Where do you live? London. No. Can I afford to rent a house? Where do you live again? London. No. What can I afford then? A cupboard under the stairs for 500 quid a month. You read that in the paper the other day. 500 quid a month for a cupboard under the stairs. How can that possibly be a healthy housing market?
Yeah, how can that be a healthy housing market? Welcome to the future. That's the future they want for us. The future of desperation, of austerity, of privation. because we simply cannot have a welfare state and this kind of massive immigration. That's what you have to look forward to. A cupboard under the stairs for £500 a month. That's probably $700, $750 a month American, okay? Stay with us. We'll be right back. And as I promised, we're going to talk about what's going on with Obamacare. We'll be right back.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. I said we would go to Obamacare. I'm actually going to hold that and do that in the next segment because we have a lot of stations that during this segment are airing news. So let me give you some news about what it looks like when the economy collapses. We just had a guy in London talking about how you had to pay £500 for a cupboard under the stairs to live in. that's not a place to live in, folks. And again, that's about $750 US. Take a look at what's going on in Puerto Rico. They're looking at organ transplants to cure their ailing economy. This is coming out of Reuters, and they say Puerto Rico is trying to build its medical tourism industry from a current level of about $80 million a year to $300 million by 2017 as part of efforts to heal its chronically sick economy. Now, listen to just how sick this is. Puerto Rico's potential, they say, as a transplant center is partly based on a macabre statistic. The Caribbean island has a murder and non-negligent manslaughter rate of 19.2 per 100,000 in 2014 versus 4.5 per 100,000 in the U.S. So 19.2 versus 4.5. In other words, over four times the number of murders per capita that they have in the U.S. But hey, they look at that and they say, that's not a bug. That's a feature. We can create a Soylent green economy out of that. Bring in the scoops, okay? They say this translates into a pool of donors in the 18 to 30 age range. The donors are victims of car accidents or gunshot wounds to the head. Yes, because Puerto Rico, they say, sadly, we have a very high crime rate. So there you go. It's not a bug. It's a feature. And we can build an economy off of our murder rate. How sick is that? That's kind of like, you know, Bernie Sanders coming out and saying, we need to mandate maternity leave because we have this enlightened place like communist China, you know, where they literally shoot people in the head if you're part of Falun Gong or you're Christians or whatever. I mean, they're known for doing that. And of course, they have their forced abortions if you have more than one child. They have a one-child policy, have had for a long time. That is loosened up in some of the provinces now, but some of them are still extremely rigorous in enforcing a one-child policy. So Bernie Sanders looks at this and goes, hey, you know, we could have, China, not exactly a model when it comes to human rights, provides 14 weeks of paid maternity leave. And as this article from Kit Daniels last week pointed out, he was immediately called on that by James Woods saying, you are a moron, an utter moron. They kill babies there. Forced abortions and other things. So, I mean, that's when you don't understand the difference between positive and negative rights, as they've talked about. And of course, people like Obama, constitutional professor, certainly did understand the difference between positive and negative rights. He talked about it before he became president. He said, you know, our Constitution has a system of what we would call negative rights, saying that government, your rights are based on prohibitions of what government can do to you. Those are negative rights. And he's not the only person to use that connotation. I think it's perfectly valid to call them positive and negative because you're prohibiting the government from doing certain things. That was what the Constitution was set up to do. It was set up to say that, you know, we possess these rights as created human beings. We all have the same rights because we're all created by the same God. And so we need to be respected because we're human. And these things we possess because we're human. So we create a government to protect those rights. That was the essence of the Declaration of Independence. Instead, the socialist comes in and says, no, you have a right to food, you have a right to shelter, you have a right to education. You have a right to maternity leave. Those are what they call positive rights. I have a right to take this. The problem is that in order for a government to provide that to you, they have to take something from somebody else. Very different than preventing the government from taking what you possess as a human being. Stay with us. When we come back, I promise I will talk about this new revelation of Obamacare, an amazing new penalty. We'll be right back.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host on this Monday, October 26, 2015. We'll be joined in the next hour by a transhumanist, Zoltan Istvan. He is running for president, actually, on a transhumanist party ticket. So we're going to talk to him about what he envisions with that. Very unusual philosophy, but he'll be coming up in the third hour. We'll be talking to him. We've actually got a video of him getting chipped on his immortality bus tour that he's going through with. So he'll be here in studio to talk to us. We've been talking about the Cloward and Piven twin pincers of open borders and a massive welfare state and how that is bringing everyone down. Who better to elect then as Speaker of the House than somebody who has promoted open borders his entire political career, even going back to being a staffer? Somebody like Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan-O is what we ought to call him. And it looks like he is now going to become the next GOP power broker. He has tapped David Hopp, somebody who also worked with him, with Jack Kemp, many years. They go way back. He's a former advisor to Republican congressional leaders, they say, and spoken of by the Washington Post as a GOP power broker himself. Of course, he's being supported by this now by the conservatives, people like the Heritage Foundation, people like Jim DeMint, who were supposed to be opposed to open borders. They are backing Paul Ryan-O 100% now, it appears. There's a few holdouts, people like Louis Gohmert. Louis Gohmert said he is supporting Daniel Webster. He says Daniel Webster, and this is a representative from Florida, he was Speaker of the House when he was in Florida. He said, Dan is the only person I'm aware of who's been a speaker anywhere. He decentralized power to get it back in the hands of the members. He says, John Boehner is no longer going to be speaker because he was too powerful. I simply cannot vote for a candidate who demands more power before he agrees to become the speaker. That's what Paul Ryan is doing. That's why Drudge has had links up talking about how Paul Ryan is demanding that he be crowned as king. He's not going to make any promises to anybody. He doesn't want any demands. He even wants to have the ability to remove the speaker, the motion to vacate the chair. He wants that taken away so that you can't take him out. And that's a guy that the conservatives want to support? I still don't understand what happened to the original motion to vacate the chair. When they had an election coming up, they had John Boehner's number two guy, his chosen successor that he wanted to see, Kevin McCarthy. They had two other people. They had Daniel Webster. They had Jason Chaffetz. We're both going to run. And then Kevin McCarthy stood up at the beginning of the meeting and said, no, I'm not going to run. I'm withdrawing my name. At that point, John Boehner shut down the election because his candidate wasn't running. What is going on in Washington? And of course, this is the third highest position in the federal government. You got the president, the vice president, next in line. If those two were to die, would be the Speaker of the House. The Speaker of the House wields a great deal of power. But we've seen John Boehner wielding it in the same way as Nancy Pelosi for the same issues. For open border, for trade promotion, fast-tracking the trade promotion, doing this secret corporate agreement. They are all operating the same way. There's total agreement at the top. That's why the White House is very excited about Paul Ryan, just like the so-called conservative organizations like Heritage Foundation with Jim DeMint, betraying the GOP voters. 93% of them do not want open borders. So why is Jeb Bush so surprised that he's sinking into irrelevancy? You know, Jeb Bush came out and he said, he had to meet this weekend with his mom and dad. That's what Trump trolled him. He said, here's a guy who wants to run our country. He can't even run his own campaign. You know what? He's cutting back big time. He has no money. He's cutting. He's meeting today with his mommy and daddy, and they're working on his campaign. trying to twist all of their old political connections to try to get people to continue to pour money into the Bush campaign, even though the voters don't want to have anything to do with them. Why don't they want to have anything to do with them? Why is Trump high in the polls? You can see this article that we got up on Infowars.com today. A pro-immigration protester dragged out of a Trump event by an attendee. The supporters were chanting, USA, USA. That's the answer. You want to know why you're failing, Jeb Bush? You know, people called him on it, and he said, blah, blah, blah. That's my answer to you. Blah, blah, blah. Drudge picked that up out of the article. It's a great headline. Yeah, that's his response to people. And he says, you know, I could be doing some really cool things. I don't need to be sitting around here miserable, listening to people demonize me, feeling compelled to demonize them. Well, please do. Please do. Go do something that's really cool. Because you're not really a very cool candidate. You have absolutely no respect for the wishes of the American people. You have trumped your open border issues. And I guess he feels like he can get away with it because we've now got Paul Ryano being selected by conservatives and conservative organizations like the Heritage Foundation pouring in behind him, even though he's obviously the most open border person you could find in the Republican side of the House. They're going to make him speaker. So I guess Jeb Bush thought that he could go full out on open borders and he could win the GOP nomination. No, it's actually the borders, stupid. Remember when they told, back when Clinton was running, they said, it's the economy, stupid? Well, it is the borders this time, stupid, because the borders reflect on the economy. The open borders are going to destroy the economy. It isn't targeted towards any particular ethnic group. There's different ethnic groups involved in Europe than there are here in America, but the strategy is the same. It is a strategy of open borders, of a vast entitlement state. And of course, Jeb Bush doesn't want to do anything to pull that back. He says, how would I know that I'm not going to do so well in this? I would have never guessed that the leader in the polls right now would be somebody who had supported a single-payer healthcare system and abortions, talking about Trump. Well, the reality of it is that the GOP leadership and people like Bush have pushed for both of those things themselves. Prescott Bush, his grandfather, was one of the founding fathers of Planned Parenthood. We've shown you the documents where he was doing fundraising letters with Margaret Sanger. We've shown you the documents about George H.W. Bush. And in the first debate, when he was criticized for being on the board of directors of an organization with Bill Gates, whose dad was head of Planned Parenthood. See, it doesn't matter. The Republicans and Democrats at the top, they're both coming from the same issues. They're together on the key issues, and one of those being abortion, being eugenics. And, of course, they were on the same board, and this was a board that gave Planned Parenthood $10 million. And Jeb Bush comes back and he goes, oh, wait a minute. I didn't know anything about that. I thought I was just enforcing Common Core, a federalized dumb the people down curriculum from Washington. I thought I was pushing Common Core. It's like, wrong answer. Thanks for playing. But if you look at the amount of money that he said he took back, he said, we were giving him $300,000 and we stopped that. So you understand that publicly, he ended funding to Planned Parenthood of $300,000, but privately, Jeb gave them 30 times that amount of money. So he wants to complain about Trump being abortion, pro-abortion, single-payer healthcare system. Maybe he is. But at least Trump will come out and oppose them on the open borders. And Trump may be lying to us. We don't know if he's telling the truth or not. We've been lied to by every one of these politicians. They'll tell you anything they want to in order to get into office. But at least at this point, you want to know what the success of Donald Trump is? It's because of the borders, stupid. That's what people are concerned about. And let me tell you why this is an economic issue. Let's take a look at what's going on with Obamacare. And it's not just Obamacare, of course. It's our educational system, too, where we've got places like Kentucky. This is on the Drudge Report. They have 94 different languages that they're trying to teach people in the schools. 94 in Kentucky. How are you going to pay for that? Well, you're going to wind up living in a little cupboard under the stairs because you're not going to be able to afford to pay the taxes to live in the kind of home that Americans have been living in. Because it's our property taxes that pay for the educational system. And if we're going to educate everybody in the world that comes here, if we're going to do what Bernie Sandinista wants to do, and that is to give everyone a free college education, I guess doctorate degree or whatever. You can start at 3 years old, and you can stay in school until you're 30. By that time, you should be a good little government clone. And you'll be loaded up with debt so that when you get out of school, you're going to be an indentured servant the rest of your life, unless you go to work for the government. But of course, you'll love the government by then, because you will have spent your entire life being propagandized by the government. That's why they're doing it. But it's also going to destroy the economy, because they want to extend that free college tuition to anybody who comes here. Dreamers. Anybody who dreams of a college education can come here from any country and be educated at your expense. And they will leave you homeless on the continent your fathers conquered. That's where this is headed. Let's talk about Obamacare. Let's talk about just that aspect of the socialist welfare state. Is it easy to cheat Obamacare and Medicaid? The General Accounting Office says it's no sweat. How easy is it to cheat Obamacare or Medicaid to receive highly subsidized federal health insurance? Well, turns out it's very easy, according to the U.S. General Accountability Office and its undercover operations. All 10 fictitious Obamacare applicants who worked for GAO were approved for federal government subsidies and issued health insurance coverage, many using phony Social Security and a fictitious employer. They don't even bother to run the Social Security number through their computer. There you go. Okay. That's how easy it is. 7 out of 8 other applicants to Medicaid insurance were also approved. And these tests were done in New Jersey, California, Kentucky. There's Kentucky again. And North Dakota. They did it this year to check how their current 2015 anti-fraud protections are working. Well, I would say they're getting a big fat zero, aren't they? You get 0% detection of fraud for Obamacare applicants, and they get a whopping 12% protection for Medicaid. That would not only be an F, that would be an F minus, minus, minus. I mean, an F is like if you get like 60%, isn't it? It's been a while since I've been in school. This is like 0%. And of course, they say the results were similar to a 2014 investigation, except there they caught one of them out of 12. So they had 8% last year. Now the detection rate is 0%. That's how easy it is to game this entitlement system. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host on this Monday, October 26, 2015. As I pointed out earlier, Zoltan Istvan, the transhumanist candidate for president, is going to be joining us in the next hour. Stay with us. It's going to be interesting. We're going to show you a video of him getting chipped, and I'm going to ask him why in the world would he ever do something like that. So we'll see what he says. As we were talking before about Obamacare, I want to let you know about a new tax that's going to hit small employers. And I want to go to that along with the Obamacare flops and what's behind the Obamacare flops in just a moment. Before I do, I want to remind you that we have specials now at the InfoWars store. We got 15% off of Ancient Defense for a limited time. We have 10% off of the complete InfoWars Select Storable Food line with free shipping. And we have Survival Shield X2 now back in stock. It's my number one pick for my family, having high-quality nascent iodine. It is something that is an essential nutrient, I feel, in my life. And so I make sure that I have a good quality supply of that. Survival Shield X2 nascent iodine is ultra clean, ultra powerful, derived from our limited supply of deep earth crystals, and it helps to fund our operation. Let me give you some of the reviews that you can read for yourself on InfoWarsLife.com. Here's one from someone, a healthy body and healthy mind in California. They say, this stuff is powerful. I take it every day. My body loves the effects. Everybody needs it, and this is the best form of the product to take. Hit the order button before it's gone. Another one from Matt in Aurora says, started giving it to my kids. I've seen a dramatic increase in productivity in my youngest schoolwork. Kids love it, and I love it. That's right. We had iodine was added to our diet and salt and in other ways, and now that has been taken out of many of the nutrients. So look at the reviews, talk to your doctor, see if it's the right thing for you, and you can still get it right now. It's available while we have supplies. You can get it at InfoWarsLife.com. That's X2 nascent iodine. Now, we were just talking before the break about Obamacare, how easy it was, according to the GAO, to defraud the system. They had a basically 0% chance of checking fraud. People could give them a false Social Security number, a false employer name. They didn't bother to check it. They just signed them up for Obamacare. But there's another side to this that is causing this system to fail. Here's a story from yesterday on Infowars.com. South Carolina Obamacare co-op flops. Approximately 67,000 individuals and small businesses will have to find new health care coverage. An Obamacare trend continues. With an announcement to not offer health insurance in 2016, Consumers Choice Health Insurance Company in South Carolina becomes the ninth consumer-owned and operated plan, that is a co-op, created under Obamacare to cease operations. They say approximately 67,000 people will be affected by this, as I reported. They say the recent announcement of a risk corridor reimbursement of only 12.6% is really what's taking them down economically. They said this week's news should not be viewed as the failure of a startup, but rather closure due to unfulfilled promises. You see, the Obama administration, they can arbitrarily change these rates. Now they said that they have this co-op will only get $362 million out of $2.9 billion that they requested. So they're going bankrupt. Gee, I thought that Obamacare was supposed to help us. No, it was designed to fail. It is nothing more than a transitional program in order to justify what they really want in the long run. And that is a single-payer system, a system that is run by the government, a system that Hillary Clinton, as First Lady, tried to shove down our throats decades ago. And now we've got it coming down our throats very quickly. And just in time for Hillary Clinton to become president, these Obamacare exchanges will be failing left and right. Now, this news comes from FreedomWorks, and they say, surprise, small employers will be hit with a tax for helping employees with their health care costs. You would think that if the government really wanted to help you with your health care costs, they wouldn't be finding employers who give you a little bit of money to help defray that, would you? Well, see, that's never been the goal. If that were the goal, they could have gone with medical savings accounts. They could have, on your income tax, they could have said, deduct 100% as a tax credit. You know, they push solar energy that way. Why not push healthcare that way? Why not say, we're going to let you pay for your healthcare or even just your health insurance before you send your money to Washington? No, they don't do that. If you've looked at itemizing your deductions, you know that you've got to get up to a pretty high threshold level before you can deduct any of your medical expenses. You have to exceed a very high percentage of your income. And then those are simply deductions. They're not credits. I mean, if you're getting solar power, you can deduct 30% of what you spend on solar power, but no deductions for this. And it gets worse. Businesses with fewer than 50 employees that would be exempt from being forced to have Obamacare, if they help their employees cover the cost of their health insurance program, listen to what they'll get. $100 per day per employee fine. That would be $36,000 for one employee. They would be fined for helping people with their insurance. No, they don't want you to have insurance. They want this to fail so they can take it over.
Defending the Republic from enemies, foreign and domestic, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. When we talk about war, it's interesting. We have to keep the face of war. And as somebody who grew up during the Vietnam era, there was no more of a face of the atrocities of war than the young girl who was napalmed. There was that striking image of her running down the middle of the road naked because her clothes had been burned off. She is now 43 years old. There's an article on the BBC about her undergoing treatment, hopefully a laser treatment that might get rid of the pain that she has been suffering. I'm sorry, she's not 43 years old. It's 43 years ago. She was 9 years old. For 43 years, she has been in pain from having napalm dumped on her as a 9-year-old girl. See, that's the face of war. And I want to play that report for you. And then I want to read you something from the Daily Beast that made me absolutely disgusted. Here's that report about this napalm girl.
A photo which in a split second captured the horror of Vietnam. A 9-year-old girl caught in a napalm attack, the unbearable pain etched on her young face. 4 decades on, and Kim Fook arrives in America excited at the prospect of new treatment for the injuries she suffered.
43 years that I suffer so much for the pain. Last night I couldn't sleep.
So we'll see how it goes tomorrow, yeah?
I cannot wait. Yeah.
Why are you crying?
So happy. Yeah.
And here to meet her at Miami Airport, the very man who took that famous photograph, an image which won Nick Ut a Pulitzer Prize.
Look how beautiful it is.
Hi, Kim. Nice to see you.
A leading skin specialist has offered Kim free treatment after hearing her story. A third of her body was scarred. People with much less severe burns have died.
She's in a lot of pain all the time for the last 40 years. Our number one goal is to get Kim out of pain so she can go on and return to her life.
It's hoped this laser surgery will soften scar tissue and, crucially, relieve the pain Kim has suffered every day.
Kim, you're doing amazing. If you need a break, tell us.
Once again, the photographer is there to capture the moment.
You know, I hope the doctor can help her.
The first treatment is deemed a success.
We're all done. I feel much better about spiritual. I'm so excited and I'm so happy all the time.
There's still a long way to go, though. Kim may need half a dozen further sessions. A little girl whose image shocked so many 40 years ago is now a woman inspiring another generation with her optimism and love of life.
There you go. She has conquered the people who would conquer her. Yeah, we can thank people like Robert McNamara, LBJ, the military-industrial complex. That's the fruit of what these people produce. And I said there was an article that made me want to throw up from the Daily Beast. And here's the title of it. She kills people from 7,800 miles away. Her name is Sparkle. She operates a drone. She's sick of whiny boys. She's perfectly okay with dealing out death. There you go. Murder is cool when it's done by a macho female, when it's done by remote control 7,800 miles away. Because, you know, then you don't have to see that uncomfortable picture of the little girl with her skin burning from napalm. Yeah, you can just do your fire and forget, you know. And this article is absolutely disgusting. And they say these planned strikes that they execute, they talk about her day, and they make a big deal out of it. What a wonderful thing it is that you've got this female who's conducting war from 7,800 miles away. Isn't that a great thing? They walk you through her daily routine and what they do. They talk about their planned strikes, and they say the planned strikes aren't the only RPA strikes. The U.S. also uses, quote-unquote, signature strikes, ones in which guys like Spade can pull the trigger if a target merely behaves like a terrorist. Yeah, so you don't need to have any reason to kill somebody. I just assumed that they were looking terrorist-like. They were making movements like a terrorist. What kind of movements does a terrorist make? You know, we saw the video that they're after Julian Assange for when he and Manning, you know, Manning leaked it and WikiLeaks published it. We saw them shooting people who were walking around. This guy looked like a terrorist because he had a camera with him. He was a cameraman. So they shot these people up, and when the ambulance arrived, they shot the ambulance up and they were laughing about it on the tape, and Manning leaked that tape and WikiLeaks put that out to the public. And, of course, nobody got punished for that, did they? Because that's a great thing if you do that kind of stuff. They say in these cases, it's much harder to be sure that an attack isn't hitting the wrong person or won't end a civilian life in the process. You know what? The biggest recruitment program we have for jihadi terrorists is our drone strike program. It is absolutely insane. But it is doing what it was designed to do. Doing what it was designed to do. To increase the killing, to increase the war, to increase the chaos so they can justify more military spending from the people at DARPA and the rest of the military industrial complex. And when we look at the military industrial complex and we look at the drone war, of course, there was that article, that large expose of slides from The Intercept that were published last week. And they followed up on that because it was a lot of data to try to go through with that. And again, we pointed out, yeah, we all know about that, just like we all knew about the Snowden leaks well before they happened, well before the Snowden leaks, the Snowden documents came out. We had been warned by NSA whistleblowers, people like William Binney, people like Thomas Drake, and others that we've had on the show. Many times we were told of what they were doing, but people needed to see the documents. They perhaps, maybe it'll make a change if people see these documents that have been released about the drone strikes. But they focused on one of these documents. And they wrote another article about just one of these PowerPoint presentations. Drones, IBM, and the big data of death. And they say, well, if you're going to look at just one of these, take a look at the one that is ISR support to small footprint CT operations in Somalia and Yemen. It was produced for the Defense Department in 2013 by consultants from IBM. And here's how they summarize this. They say it's a rare, peculiar cultural artifact that opens a window into the deep guts of the military-industrial complex where the technologies of assassination and corporate sales converge. All described in language as dead as the target of an ISR platform kinetic engagement. Yeah, because kinetic engagement, that's, you know, shooting and fighting, that sort of thing. They call those kinetic engagements. Those are different than the unconventional warfare, the propaganda, the lies that they conduct on you. And of course, they're doing that not just on other countries, but they do that here domestically. And so what they're saying is, this is exactly like, and let me read you this next quote. As you can examine in this secret ISR study, you'll see that the Pentagon's drone program uses data analytics in almost precisely the same way that IBM encourages corporations to use it to track their customers. The only significant difference comes at the end of the drone process where the customer is killed. Yeah. It's an end around the process, end around our protections. And this is all, as we pointed out many times, this is all part of the pre-crime programs that we need to be so concerned about. Again, I'll go back to this article from the end of last week that we had on Infowars.com. The UK goes full Orwell. Government will take children away from parents if they think they might become radicalized. And they go through some recent court decisions. And of course, these are aimed at Islamicists in the UK. And they are going to establish this precedent by going after them. But you need to understand that when they came out with this Strong Cities Network, when that was introduced by the Department of Justice, by the Attorney General at the United Nations, and is being run by a European think tank, and that European think tank was just like the Southern Poverty Law Center. If you read their papers, they could be written by the Southern Poverty Law Center. You won't find anything in the Strong Cities Initiative that is talking about Islamic terrorists, except to push back against the notion and call it Islamophobia. No, they're concerned with people who are anti-immigration. They're concerned with people who are anti-Islam. Those are the people they consider to be radical extremists. But understand how this is going to work in the UK. Right now, they're focusing on Muslims. And they say, in other words, the high court judges within the family division are now tasked with determining whether children will be made wards of the state based solely on suspicions of possible radicalization. Children will be torn from their mothers and fathers in Muslim homes, and then later they will be torn from the homes of people that they consider to be right-wing extremists. And that will all be subject to the whims and the inherently flawed watch of the larger citizenry, the citizenry that has been put to sleep. That's what we have to look forward to. We need to carefully vet our leaders. We need to understand how they lie to us, how they use false flags to begin wars. And as I was talking about these admissions from Tony Blair, which aren't admissions at all, he came out and said, I'm sorry that I was given bad data. Sorry, not my fault. Mistakes were made and they weren't my mistakes, is what he said. Some headlines on the Daily Mail: faux sincerity, weasel words, the spin king strikes again. Michael Burley talks about Tony Blair's controversial Iraq war apology. And that's precisely what I was saying yesterday. It's one of the most weaselly apologies you could ever see. And of course, we know that it isn't even blowback that created ISIS. We know that they are a tool of the CIA. And as I talked about at great length yesterday, we know that ISIS and the Islamic State, a transnational caliphate. That idea was being sold by a radical Turkish imam, Fethullah Gulen, who now runs over 1,000 schools worldwide. One of the largest networks of charter schools in the United States. $500 million worth of money, federal money, goes to Fethullah Gulen to run these Islamic schools. He was kicked out of Turkey because he was pushing an Islamic State, a caliphate, in 1999. 16 years ago, he was pushing that idea. And you want a CIA connection? How did he get into the United States? There were people in the government that didn't want him to come in, but the CIA gave him letters of recommendation to get into the United States. So yeah, the CIA has been equipping and training and creating Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and they are creating the educational institutions that will create the next generation of ISIS as well. Let's take a look at prohibition. And when we look at prohibition, we need to look at not only drug prohibition, but gun prohibition. Until people understand that you don't allow the government to keep you from taking whatever you want to put in your body, or forcing you to put something in your body without your consent, without your informed consent, as Ben Carson supports both of those. He supports prohibiting people from taking drugs, many of the drugs that they would take, like medical marijuana, people believe and have good studies to show that it would help them, help their health, but he wants to deny that to people. On the other hand, he likes vaccines, so he supports the government forcing you to take vaccines without your informed consent. But then he likes guns, so he doesn't want the government to prohibit guns. And then you got Michelle Obama, who wants to tell people what they can eat, students what they can eat in their schools. Do you understand? You don't get to make those kind of mandates, and you're either going to swallow all the prohibitions and lose all of your freedoms, or you're going to allow other people to have the freedom to do what they want without shoving it down their throat. That's what Ben Carson doesn't realize. When Ben Carson says, we need to be consistent, he goes, hey, look at these people who want to take your guns. They're the ones who want to let people have drugs. You know, where's the consistency in that? And it's like, yeah, you're right. It's not consistent. And neither is his position. We need to have a position that consistently supports our individual freedom of choice, our individual rights. We have a system. We just don't use it. That system is called the Constitution. It's called the Bill of Rights. But nobody wants to pay any attention to it, apparently. We need to bring the left and the right together on these issues. We need to get them to understand that the principles about drug prohibition are the same as the principles about gun prohibition. And take a look at where this is going. Can't the conservatives understand that we have destroyed so many of our foundations of our society? We've destroyed the foundations of private property. Look at this article. This is from truthvoice.com. They say court rules that cops were wrong to seize a car over $20 of weed. They say for nearly 3 years, Linda Ross, 26, has been fighting the seizure of her vehicle, which police took after finding a small amount of marijuana inside. They found the possession of 1 gram of weed. In a 2-1 decision, majority in a court that she appealed to wrote that because a customer had supposedly given her the weed as a tip for a pizza delivery, that she hadn't actually driven her car with the intent of purchasing drugs, the vehicle wasn't subject to forfeiture. But guess what? The police aren't giving it back. They like to steal property. That's what the civil asset forfeiture program is all about. We've talked about this many times. And you don't even have to have any connection to this. It could be somebody that was in your car that you weren't driving the car. They could have your high school student could be driving a car. He could have a friend in the back who had a joint in his pocket. They could confiscate your car that your son was driving because one of his friends in the back seat had remnants of marijuana in his pocket. That's how insane this is. Because they don't have to take you to court. They don't have to find you guilty. They don't even have to charge you with a crime. But now it's getting even worse. We've talked about this many times, but look at where this is headed. We don't stop this, so it gets even worse. Cops are now using prepaid card readers to rob motorists of digital funds on the roadside. Civil asset forfeiture is coming under increased criticism around the country, they say, as the immoral nature of the drug war weapon becomes exposed. Civil asset forfeiture, again, is nothing but outright theft. Innocent people have their cash and their assets taken. No conviction of crime. They just steal it right there on the side of the road. And of course, New Mexico has been one of the first states to make meaningful reforms because it was a very high-profile case of some people driving away from Vegas. They had won some cash. The highway patrol knew that they were coming out of Vegas, thought they might have some cash, and it was a scam that they set up with multiple law enforcement agencies, robbed these people of their cash. I can't remember. I think they might have taken their car. But listen to this. This is the new twist. The Electronic Recovery and Access to Data Program, prepaid card reader, ERAD. This tool, developed by the Department of Homeland Security, is increasingly being deployed by local police departments. ERAD allows cops to swipe prepaid cards, check the balance, freeze the account, and steal the money. How's that? You know, and the reason for that, the justification for that, is because, you know, drug traffickers are using prepaid cards while they're traveling instead of taking bundles of cash. So they would take your cash because, you know, drug dealers sometimes use cash. Or they take your car because, you know, sometimes drug dealers use cars. Now they're going to take your bank account because sometimes drug dealers use bank accounts. You know, they're going to take your freedom because sometimes drug users use their freedom. They're going to take your due process because sometimes our jails aren't full enough. When are you going to have enough of this, America? When are you going to say we're not going to allow the police to be robbers? This is nothing but outright theft. Highway robbery. Literally, literally, literally. Stay with us. We'll be back. Oh, one more thing. 5.7% goes to the company that runs the program. How's that? Partners in Crime. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host on this Monday, October 26, 2015. I'm going to be joined in the next hour by Zoltan Isfahan. He is the transhumanist who is running for president. He's here with his Immortality Bus Tour, and we're going to talk to him about getting a chip and some of the other things that he's done. It should be an interesting interview. That's going to be coming up in the next hour. I want to get back to the news, the report that we showed you earlier of a drone showing the massive march of refugees in Slovenia. We have a article up on Infowars.com, Kurt Nemo, that shows that in detail. A drone video shows a huge column of illegal immigrants in Slovenia. Slovenia Prime Minister says that the crisis may destroy the European Union. This is dramatic footage captured by a drone. It shows a large column, an amazing amount of people marching in a column. Look at that when you see that. It's just absolutely amazing. This is what is going to bring down the West, and it's by design. You open up a massive entitlement state. That's what we spent the first hour talking about, a massive entitlement state. And you couple that with open borders, and you can run the economy over the cliff with your foot on the accelerator, just like Thelma and Louise. And it wasn't Thelma and Louise, but it was Cloward and Piven, a couple of sociologists who proposed doing precisely that back in the 1960s. We also have an article that's just gone up from Kit Daniels pointing out that Hillary Clinton, of course, today is her 68th birthday. It's really funny. Matt Drudge had a picture of a birthday cake that was just covered with burning birthday candles. I mean, you couldn't even see the top of the cake crammed in there. And I said, happy birthday, Hillary. Subtly reminding us just how old Hillary Clinton is. Well, as Kit Daniels points out, Hillary Clinton would be the second oldest person if elected. Only Ronald Reagan was older at inauguration. Well, the problem with Hillary Clinton is not so much her age as it is the age of her ideas. Both she and Bernie Sanders have some of the oldest ideas, thoroughly discredited ideas that you will find out there. Yes, they are dyed-in-the-wool government socialists who want to mandate and control everything. They're the most anti-choice people you could ever imagine. Of course, they call themselves pro-choice. Isn't that interesting? They call themselves pro-choice. Again, before we go back to some more news here, I want to let you know that we have an extended sale on our InfoWars Select Storable Foods. Use the promo code FOOD at checkout to get 10% off of InfoWars Select Storable Food at InfoWarsStore.com. Plus, and this is the biggest savings, you get free shipping. All the ingredients are made in the USA, even the packaging, and the packaging is exceptional. It will last for 25 years, the best packaging in the industry, military-grade barrier against light, oxygen, or moisture entering the pouches. The pouches can be resealed once they're open. And again, it is high-quality food made in the USA, including the packaging. You can get that at InfoWarsStore.com right now. Use the promo code FOOD at checkout. Get 10% off. Get free shipping for a limited time only. It was interesting to see Ben Carson come out and make his pronouncements that he's going to essentially ignore the 10th Amendment and double down on the war on drugs, you know, just like Chris Christie. It's a traditional Republican position. You know, we're told that Ben Carson is an outsider, but if you look at his position, there is absolutely nothing unusual at all about any of the issues that he takes. He's not taking the side of freedom on anything. It's a typical boilerplate GOP platform. Could have gone to platform.com, check the GOP button, and print out what he's going to run for and stick that on his website. It is, you know, he may not be anybody who's ever been elected for president before, but it is exactly the same thing. Now he's comparing abortion to owning slaves. And he's exactly right in the sense that he says, you can tell if you're the master, you can tell the slave to do whatever you want to, and they have to do it. Well, apply that to his position on informed consent. He thinks he's your master. He can tell you to take vaccines, and there's nothing you can do about it because you're going to be his slave. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. We're going to be joined in the next segment by Zoltan Istvan, the transhumanist who is running for president, and he is here with his immortality bust, and he's going to tell us about getting a chip and his plans on why he wants to run as a transhumanist for president. Should be an interesting interview. We'll be beginning that in the next segment. In this segment, I wanted to go over some of the last news items that we had. Of course, we all know that millions of students are fleeing Michelle Obama's lunch program. You know, just like Hillary Clinton, who decided that as first lady, she had the power to take over the medical community when Bill Clinton was president. She was going to impose upon everybody a single payer system because we all know that monopolies are more efficient than competition, don't we? Only in the imagination of a socialist. But that's what she tried to do. And now they're taking a longer view towards that, creating mandates for Obamacare, and then deliberately setting this up so that it's going to fail and people are going to have to go to the single-payer system, which is what they wanted to. That was their goal all along. But, of course, we see now Michelle Obama, as First Lady, decides that she should be the one who decides what your children eat. Where do these people get these ideas? Where do they what makes them think that they are king of the universe? Especially if they're First Lady. We didn't even vote for Hillary or Michelle Obama as First Lady. What makes them think they can dictate to us in this way? Of course, the children are not eating this. We've had multiple reports about how a school district, see, where was that? Was that Montana? I think they said, we don't want $180,000 worth of federal money because we're losing even more money than that in our school lunch program. And that's been happening all over the country. Now, here's a story out of Fox News, out of New Hampshire. And they say the bureaucracy has run amok. A school dumps the federal lunch program and then is then deemed to be a processing plant. This is nothing but federal gangsterism. Listen to this. Nathan Greenberg believes that he runs a school district, but federal government bureaucrats look at his Londonderry, New Hampshire operation and see a food processing plant. They say that's a strange dilemma the 5,000 student district finds itself in after deciding at the end of last school year to pull the high school out of the unpopular national school lunch program. Why would we ever, ever have a national school lunch program? See, why would you ever let one person decide what everybody else in the country is going to eat? That's absolute insanity. It's set up to fail. And of course, many people, many nutritionists have talked about how her lunch programs are not healthy. But he says, we saw the federally mandated food go right into the garbage. We had some of the healthiest trash cans in the state of New Hampshire. Well, not actually. They weren't actually, they were very high in carbs and other things. She focuses on a couple of things like salt and sugar that she doesn't like, but then she puts all kinds of processed garbage into the food program that she has there because, you know, corporate sponsors. Anyway, so how did the federal government retaliate? Well, the U.S. Department of Agriculture came back and said, well, we think that you are a food processing plant and started to regulate them for that. See, that's the kind of gangster activities that we see from the government. You tell them that you don't want to do something in one area and they come back and they clobber you with that. That's why there's a 10th Amendment Foundation, 10th Amendment Center, with an article saying America has become exactly what the founders sought to destroy. They say over the last 90 years or so, the U.S. has been transformed into the very thing the founding generation of this country fought to destroy. We learn in history classes and school that the American revolutionaries rejected the notion of a king, but that's what we have now. We have a king, we have a queen, we have bureaucracies who, as I've pointed out before, are free to write their own laws. They create their own military or their own police force to assess the fines that they do, and then they drag you into their own court where you have no presumption of innocence. They have literally sent swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. That's what we have today.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want to stop tyranny? Well, so does he. Live from the Infowars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host on this Monday, October 26, 2015. Joining me in the studio is Zoltan Isfahan. He is founder of the Transhumanist Party. You are now, Zoltan, taking a bus tour. Is that right? You're going across country with your, I think it's the Immortality Bus. Is that what it's called?
Indeed. It is a bus that looks essentially just like a coffin, and we're trying to provoke a conversation about life extension.
Okay. All right. And we've got a video, and I want to run this video and ask you about what you're doing with this and why you would do this. We got a video of you getting a chip put in. Are you guys ready to roll that video? Can we do that? Okay, let's roll that video.
But you have the chip already built into the thing?
Or yep, it's already in the injector.
Okay.
So it's sterilized and ready to go.
Yeah.
There we go. See that little pop feeling?
That was nothing.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I've done much worse over the last few days.
How long ago was this?
About 5 weeks ago.
Candid in the ladder.
Here, we'll give it some blood.
It's a pretty big needle. It's hard to show. Look, there's some blood. But it's a 60-second procedure. In fact, maybe it's a 10-second procedure done quickly.
Everybody wants to see the blood involved here. It's definitely, it hurts more than a normal needle. That's for sure. But it's a pop.
Are you feeling any more?
And they're putting that in your hand. For people who are listening on the radio, they're putting a chip in your hand.
Indeed, yes.
And what is this chip going to do?
Well, it's very rudimentary, honestly. It doesn't really do much, but for example, with the bus, if you have the right software and the right technology, you can start your bus by waving your hand over the ignition instead of having a key. Or, for example, to get into the Alex Jones studio, you could just swipe your hand at the security and that would let you right in. In the future, though, it's going to be able to do things like you can pay with it. It'll monitor your temperature, your hydration levels, and maybe even tell you whether you're getting enough iron from broccoli or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's going to do a lot of different things like that.
And then, of course, the government can also track your position all the time with it.
So that is absolutely a concern. It's a concern of mine. But at the same time, I'm sort of like the iPhone or the smartphones. I guess there's a trade-off between your surveillance and security issues versus the government kind of prying into your life.
Yeah, exactly. That's always a trade-off. And, I was one of the first people to get an iPhone. I got the very first iPhone on the very first day. I love technology. And I got to say, when I'm finished with this contract, I'm going back to some kind of a burner phone because I'm just fed up with the surveillance state. And so I'm willing, now I've looked at this and it's like, I will put up with a lot of inconvenience for my privacy, because I think that's something that I don't want to give up. But let me ask you about health concerns. Aren't you concerned about the health issues of having that there? Because there's been some reports of animals who've gotten these kinds of chips, developed tumors at the site of that. This is something you put in fairly recently. There hasn't been a lot of history with these kind of chip implants. Are you concerned about possible health effects?
So yes, I am. But so far, at least in the biohacker community, I haven't heard of anything negative specifically with anyone that has received this chip. Now, it's really the size of a grain of rice. It's tiny. That said, I do want to say, you know, my wife is a surgeon, and she said, you know, you do need to be cautious that what if this got free and went into the bloodstream and clogged an artery or something. So there are dangers like that. However, I have not heard of one like that. And I think a lot of people bring up a lot of the dangers, but so far there's very little evidence that would prove contrary to this. Again, not that many people have had it, and I'm very happy that I did it. I would probably do another one. I'm a big advocate for cranial implants. You know, as you may know, there's about 500,000 people in the world right now that have cranial implants, brain implants. Most of them are cochlear implants that help with deafness so that people can hear, but some are already working towards epilepsy or working to help with Alzheimer's. So I think the era of implants is coming, and it's not, you know, even though I got this tiny thing in my hand, we're talking on the next 10 years, many people are going to be doing, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And the real question is, how can we get the public to feel secure with them? And especially, how can we make sure the government doesn't abuse it?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, part of that is informed consent. I mean, personally, if I'm looking at this, I want to know that there's enough of a history with something, anything that I put in my body, whether it's an implant or whether it's a vaccine or, you know, anything that is new, I want to know what the history of this is. I want to see the studies. I want to see studies that have been done by people besides the people who created the device or who created the vaccine to know if it is something that's safe. And the important part of that is not only the informed part of that, but it's also the consent part of that. As somebody who is running in a political party, would you support mandatory implants of people?
No, of course not. But what I would support is development from the government, you know, putting real money into it. For example, through Obama's Brain Initiative, $70 million is now going to DARPA, and they are trying to develop a chip to help with depression from soldiers coming back from wars and conflict zones. And I think that's an excellent use of, you know, cranial implants is to try to cure something like depression. I
mean, do you really believe that that's the mission of DARPA?
No. I'm just saying that's
seriously,
one of the things.
Seriously. I mean, DARPA has used these kinds of things, benign uses, and come up with it and said, you know, we just want these killer robots because we might have to go into a nuclear power plant like Fukushima someday. If you go back and you look at the history of DARPA, there's an excellent book. Alex has interviewed the author, Andy Jacobson, The Pentagon's Brain, going back to the 1950s, the 1960s. I mean, DARPA is there to create weapon systems. They're not there to help people. And, you know, when I look at these brain system, these brain initiatives that DARPA is part of, I have to remember that after World War II, after the Korean War, they were doing frontal lobotomies on people. The Pentagon was doing. You know, you got PTSD, we'll give you a frontal lobotomy. This allows them to do this electronically, not having to use, you know, in a much cleaner way. Okay. So I mean, again, it comes down to the element of trust and the whole fact that DARPA would come out with these programs and put a beard on it and say, oh, this is for peaceful, benign use. I just don't buy it.
Well, and I understand your worries. And of course, you're older than me, so you've seen more of the history of DARPA. But at the same time, I think we are really just talking about depression for soldiers. So it's hard to see how that could go wrong. Now, I do understand about the war machines. You're right. There is a long history of developing, you know, war toys. And frankly, my political party and myself are pretty against war. In fact, one of our main initiatives is to try to divert money from defense and bomb making and wars to health, to science and technology. So I'm definitely I wouldn't say anti-military, but a huge part of my platform is pulling money away from the military and putting it directly into scientists' hands.
Yeah, I would like to pull the money away from the military and pull it out of the government's hands, quite frankly. I would like for us to be able to make our own decisions, to make our voluntary associations, to fund our own research if we wish, to be able to afford to buy whatever we wished for our own health. But of course, you know, as long as we send all of our money to Washington and then have them make those decisions for us, that won't happen. Let's talk a little bit about your transhumanist party. Let's talk about the platform here. Here's the first one. Implement a transhumanist bill of rights mandating government support of longer lifespans via science and technology. And I want to know what the bill of rights is, but you kind of lost me there when you used the word mandating, okay? Because I'm not really big on mandates, especially when it's something that's coming from the federal government.
No, of course, and mandate is kind of a strong word. But basically, we want to have it so that, and this is one of the reasons why I'm driving this bus across the country, we're going to be delivering this transhumanist bill of rights to the U.S. Capitol building in about 5 weeks. And We want to make it so that politicians cannot step into the way of people's health. We feel that politicians throughout history, for example, with George W. Bush stopping stem cell funding, he has hurt people's health. And we would like to make it so that no politician, because of either religious or cultural positions, can stand in the way of people's overall health. Now, I know it's...
The stem cell research. Let's understand that when they stopped infant stem cell research, okay, there's still adult stem cell research. And it's actually adult stem cell research that they've had all the advances from. They haven't had any advances from fetal stem cell research. So you can do things in a way that doesn't violate people's rights. For example, we have prohibitions against doing things to people without their informed consent because of things that were done during the Nuremberg trials. They were making the case, they made the case with Nazi scientists, with German scientists, that in the greater good of humanity, they could do things to people without their informed consent, horrific things to people without their informed consent. So there are some ethical checks that we want to put on medical progress that people do. We don't just say, well, if we're going to benefit potentially from this medically, we're going to remove those checks. So it is valid, I think, to have some ethical checks. Do you agree?
No, absolutely we want ethical checks. And it's not that we're trying to eliminate all sense of culture or religious background or anything like that. It just happens to be that, for example, in the case of the Pope, when he is, you know, they have been essentially against birth control, which is essentially against condom usage. And now you have 200 million Catholics in Africa and an AIDS epidemic that's out of control. This is the kind of stuff that's actually harming people and making them die sooner because people aren't using condoms and, of course, they're getting AIDS. So we want to create a mandate. And it's not necessarily needs to be a mandate, but we just wish that there would be some kind of cultural environment out there where leaders would not step in the way of scientific progress that is directly related to your health. Because when it comes down to health, I think everyone agrees this is for our children, for the loved ones, for our friendships, this is the most important thing. So we just want to get people to understand that some things shouldn't get in the way of health.
Well, I would agree with you when we're looking at things like, again, going back to informed consent, not letting them mandate that we take certain medical treatments, not letting them prohibit that we get certain FDA drugs. If I have a life-threatening situation and I want to take an experimental drug, and even if it hasn't been vetted, that should be my decision to take that drug. So I feel that if we don't make decisions about what we put into our own bodies, then we are nothing but slaves to people. I don't think that the federal government ought to be able to make any of those determinations. But I think it's also very important that we... I'm concerned about the idea that we would mandate support from the government, because I've seen how that turns around very quickly. We're out of time for this segment. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about what transhumanism means, and we're talking to Zoltan Isfahan of the Transhumanist Party. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host, and we're talking to Zoltan Isfahan. He is our guest in studio. He's on a tour heading to Washington in his immortality bus, which he says looks like a coffin. And you're going to deliver a transhumanist bill of rights mandating government support for longer lifespan via science and technology. We talked about the fact that I have problems with mandates. Tell us a little bit about I understand you're still writing the Bill of Rights. It's part of the process as you're going there. But tell us a little bit about some of the types of things that we would expect to see on this Bill of Rights.
Well, sure. I mean, as we spoke earlier, the first thing we'd like to do is create some kind of mandate that would say the government must, look towards spending resources on your health, specifically your longevity, your lifespan. And I think that's really important because right now, they're interested in your happiness and in the welfare of the country, but not necessarily individually in your lifespans. And we really think the length of your lifespans and the quality of it is most important. So that's what it's going to be at the top of the Transhumanist Bill of Rights. But other things that we're supportive of is getting government research into, for example, the field of cryonics, where you can freeze someone who is dead and hopes to bring them back to life in 50 years. But also different types of things, maybe even like ectogenesis, artificial wombs. This might free women up from having to go through labor and having a baby. It's frankly still quite dangerous. So we just want research money into that stuff. But right now there's not much going. And so a Transhumanist Bill of Rights is going to piece by piece try to say, hey, America, you need to spend money on medicine, and especially radical medicine that is improving human lives.
I guess when I look at it, and we talk about government doing research and directing research, I look at the way the government manages the Pentagon, for example. And I look at a lot of misplaced priorities, even with the space program, especially with the space program. There was a great deal of waste in that. That's one of the areas where I have a problem with it. The other area I have a problem with is the whole idea of rights being something that we demand from government. You know, as I was talking about earlier in the program, we've always, the initial understanding of rights in our Bill of Rights was to prohibit the government from doing certain things to us. In other words, leave us alone. We have these certain inalienable rights that we get from our Creator. So leave us alone with this. And they were prohibitions against government actions. Now we have a kind of a concept of rights that says, give me this, give me that, give me, you know, fund my research of my pet project. And then the third thing I would say, and I'll let you respond to this, would be when you have a very individualized, very individualistic approach to all of this, and yet it seems like there's a contradiction that you want the government to do this for you rather than self-organizing at an individual level where you would have greater freedom. Because when the government gets in, it's going to take away some of that freedom besides malinvestment.
No. There's certainly some type of contradiction here. And I think a lot of it comes from the fact that I began a lot of my, I suppose, futurist career and wrote a novel, The Transhumanist Wager, which is very libertarian. But that said, now that I'm actually in politics and an aspiring politician, I've had to become a little bit more realistic and implement some policies and ideas that are more centric and bring people closer to the fold, and especially bring government more closer to my campaign in the sense that I have to work with it. Now, I know that's upset people like yourself that might be more libertarian-minded, but at the same time, realistically speaking, to try to make inroads as an aspiring politician, there's going to be a certain amount of compromise. And that's where I bring in this idea that, you know, I just got to be a bit more pro-government rather than this this kind of staunch libertarian that I used to be. And that's sort of where I am right now in both my campaign and also in the Transhumanist Party. And in the things that I'm trying to push forward is this kind of mix and this compromise.
Okay. Now, one of the things that we didn't talk about when I introduced you, I didn't talk at all about really your background. You've been a writer for National Geographic, for Psychology Today, for Vice's Motherboard. You've worked as a blogger, a futurist, a transhumanist. You've got a novel that you wrote, and we're going to talk about that novel in the next section. You've done a lot of different things. It's very interesting. And I do want to get into your novel, which is The Transhumanist Wager, that came out in 2013, a science fiction novel. I think that will give us some insight into your philosophy as a transhumanist. But let's, in this segment, let's go through a few more of the things on your platform here. You want to get rid of the drug war, legalize mild recreational drugs like marijuana. I would agree with that, except I wouldn't put the qualification of recreational drugs. I mean, I understand that if the government wants to prohibit anything, they need to do it constitutionally like they did with alcohol. Create a government where all politicians' original professions are represented equally. How do we do that?
Well, that's a very difficult one. Basically, we're just trying to stop the fact that 40% of politicians are attorneys. We just want a clear field of people being represented from every walk of life in their professions in the government. I just don't think 40%
of certainly the government should be attorneys. The voters want somebody who's outside that paradigm. We're going to be right back. We're talking to Zoltan Isfahan, and we're going to talk about what transhumanism is about. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Crashing through the lies and disinformation, it's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host on this Monday, October 26, 2015. With me in the studio is Zoltan Isfahan. He is an American writer, a futurist, a philosopher, and a transhumanist. And so we're going to talk to him in this segment about what a transhumanist is, what his philosophy is. We've been talking about the platform of his transhumanist party. I have one or two more questions about that. But then I want to get on to his novel that he's written, The Transhumanist Wager, as well as his philosophy. Before we do, real quickly, I just want to remind you that we have on special 15% off of Ancient Defense for a limited time, 10% off the complete InfoWars Select Storable Food Line with free shipping. That's a huge savings to get the to get storable food with free shipping. Also, we have BrainForce available, still in stock at our site. Unlike some energy drinks and supplements, BrainForce uses natural brain activation ingredients like yerba mate extract and alpha GPC. BrainForce on InfoWarsLife.com already has hundreds of five-star reviews. Let me read a couple of those to you. Here's one from Whaler Matt in Cincinnati, Ohio. He says, this stuff is amazing in terms of computer ease. It's like upgrading from a dual-core chip to a quad-core. More pipelines in the brain are open to multitask. I find myself not wondering in conversation when talking to others. No harsh letdown like caffeine or energy drinks. You can see the reviews on our site at InfoWarsLife.com. Take a look at that. See how it's worked out for other people. Make the decision for yourself. Again, BrainForce is in stock at InfoWarsLife.com, as well as the specials we have on Ancient Defense and InfoWars Select Storable Food. Now, Isfahan, one of the things I want to talk to you about, quick question here. We were talking just before the break about getting rid of the lawyers. Certainly, we see that people are fed up with career politicians, are fed up with lawyers. For some reason, though, politics seems to attract them, okay? It seems to attract people who want to control others, quite frankly. And so we have a lot of lawyers. So, I mean, what do you do about that? I mean, do you set up a quota system? I mean, how would you do that as a platform?
Well, you know, what you would try to do is make it so that there was a limit to the amount of lawyers that you could have in the federal government, you know? And basically, if you were going to be running in a certain position, if you were an attorney, that was your career, then you would simply not be allowed. Maybe it would be through some type of system where, you roll dice or something like that. But you have to have a system that does not allow 40% of the country to be run by a certain type of person. And lawyers represent a certain type of person.
So I can imagine they would have a lot of fun with lawsuits on that.
Of course, they'd be furious. And when I wrote this article originally about it, it caused a lot of, upset a lot of people. But you need some type of system that will not allow that into thing. I want to see journalists in government. I want to see doctors in government. I want to see plumbers in government. I want to see nurses in government. I want to see across the spectrum all types of jobs running the country. That's a fair democracy, not 40% attorneys.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things that has to motivate people, you have to look at is what's their motivation to get in. And I think a lot of people just look at this system, and it's a natural career progression for people in the law, unfortunately. But most people who aren't lawyers just don't want to get involved in this messy system. Let me ask you one more thing on your platform here that I thought was kind of unusual. You would like to advocate for morphological freedom, the right to do anything to your body as long as it doesn't harm other people. Are there prohibitions on that now? I mean, what is the...
Well, there are certainly some things. We have the concept of euthanasia in America, which is, of course, sketchy, and states control it. There's also, the ability of some things that you might want to do to your body. You would need FDA approval. You need doctor's approval. And, the biohacker community doesn't want to be told what kinds of chips to be put into their bodies or not.
Why not just get rid of the FDA completely? I mean, you could have it be an inspection situation, right? You could have, just like these school lunches, I can understand why you would have somebody coming around and looking to make sure that things are not being done in an unhealthy way. But to tell people what they're going to eat in their school lunch program, or to tell people what drugs are going to be allowed to take or not take, I mean, to me, that just doesn't make any sense.
No, and
you could have inspections to make sure that people are not being given poison, that there's not fraud and that sort of thing. But beyond that, I don't understand.
No, and yeah. You're getting rid of the FDA is something you're going to be seeing from me in the next 2 months in an article. I would like to completely either get rid of it or reinvent it, because from a transhumanist, the most important thing we have is that drugs and technology gets approved and into the system so that we can use it to live longer and live better as quickly as possible. But the FDA, some stuff takes 8 to 10 years to get approved. And this is why China is catching up on the United States, is because it only takes 18 months to get a drug approved there, whereas it takes 8 years here. You can't run a system, you can't run a country when there's that much regulation involved. So yes, rewriting the rules of the FDA or getting rid of it or something like that is something that I definitely...
Certainly this case that we just had where the hedge fund young guy that made a lot of money as a hedge fund manager went out and bought a pharmaceutical company and then promptly raised it. I think it was like 5,000%. It went from $13.50 a pill to $750 a pill. One of the reasons he's able to do that is because of FDA regulations, making it difficult even for people to make generic drugs, because this is something for, that the patent had expired a long, long time, many decades ago. But still, if somebody wanted to come in and make a generic drug, they were prohibited from doing that. Because of FDA regulations. So certainly it has inhibited people's access to healthcare.
And again, this hurts health. And this is really what my entire platform is about. I just want to make health easier and better to achieve. So anything that goes against health is, in my opinion, going to be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about your novel, and let's talk about your philosophy of transhumanism. Your novel is A Transhumanist Wager. It's a 2013 science fiction novel. To just kind of break this down briefly for people, I'm looking at what I found on the Wikipedia description of it, so you can correct this. It follows the life of protagonist Jethro Knights, no relation to me, a philosopher whose effort is to promote transhumanism, which ultimately leads to a global revolution. The protagonist studies philosophy, sails around the world to promote life extension, and his love interest is a physician. Sounds autobiographical. Sounds like you. You've traveled around the world with National Geographic. You're married to a physician.
Well, yes, it is. A third of it is probably autobiographical.
Yes, yes. Now, the interesting thing I find looking at this is you say transhumanists in your novel are being targeted and killed by Christian terrorists. So what is it about Christians that you would think they would target and kill somebody who is a transhumanist?
Well, you know, again, the novel is set up, first off, it's a novel, it's fiction. And it's set up so that there are some Christian fundamentalists out there, and there probably are out there in the world, that would really like to stop all technology. When I talk about trying to live indefinitely or conquer death, some Christians get upset at that because they think, well, why do you need to conquer death if we're going to go to Jesus when we die? And so transhumanists, most don't believe that. I'm an atheist. And so the novel is set up as that, is to kind of show that conflict. And of course, that conflict grows bigger and bigger through the novel. And eventually you get to a point when the Christians say, no more science, no more transhumanism. You can have basic healthcare, but you can't have radical life extension. You can't have artificial intelligence. You can't have robots taking over and taking all our jobs. And that's where the conflict erupts. And so that's what the book's really about.
That's an interesting take on Christianity, because as a Christian, I'm not anti-science. I'm concerned about the misuse of technology, as we talked about earlier with DARPA. And I don't think that Christianity is antithetical to scientific inquiry. I mean, we've had people like Isaac Newton or James Maxwell, who did Maxwell's equations, connecting a unified theory between magnetism and electricity. They were very strong Christians. I mean, they were as they wrote as much Christian commentary as they did scientific commentary, perhaps more so in the case of Isaac Newton. So I don't really see that there's any conflict inherent in Christianity. I look at people that are paranoid about Christians terrorizing them, and it makes me think about the movie An American Carol by David Zucker, where there was this, I don't know if do you ever see that movie? Michael Moore, there was a Michael Moore character, and it was a satire, it was a parody. And the Michael Moore character was doing a documentary that was very anti-American. He was very concerned about Christians. At one point, they even show some nuns in his movie jumping on a bus and pulling out the pen of a hand grenade, which the pen is a cross, and yelling, Hail Mary, as they blow up the bus. I mean, when I look at that, I think that is a fear that many people on the secular left have about Christians that I just think is really unfounded.
And again, this is where the book becomes a novel. And of course, it's designed as well to be entertaining. So there has to be some conflict. But, since I've written the novel, and I started writing the novel 6 years ago, it took me 4 years because about 20% of the novel is pure philosophy. I've grown to realize that actually many Christians are much more embracing of science than perhaps I realized when I was younger. And at the same time, I've also realized that the conflict between transhumanism and some of the doctrine in the Bible is something that's going to have to be faced by every person that wants to, use this technology. In fact, that's why the book's called The Transhumanist Wager. It's based sort of on Pascal's wager, but instead of about God, it's about using technology to live indefinitely. And I think we're all going to be faced with that. And many Christians are going to have to say, well, where does the scripture kind of fit within living indefinitely or replacing an arm with a robotic arm or even having cranial implants? Is that really the mark of the beast? Or is that something for our health? And this is, what the book tries to illustrate. It doesn't necessarily you know, necessarily pick sides either way. Of course, it ends being pro-transhumanist, but at the same time, it hopefully leads everyone to a path where they can say, yeah, technology is good, and so can spirituality. In fact, the wife of the protagonist is very spiritual, so she counterbalances his atheism.
Let me ask you, and I think, too, you know, it says in the Wikipedia description of the novel, that the wife of the character challenges him, says that death is a part of life. I would say, as a Christian, I don't see death as a natural part of life. I see it as a judgment of God. That is basically Christian doctrine, that, you know, the earth has been basically destroyed twice because of rebellion, and death is a punishment. It's not the natural state of man. So I don't really look at Christianity as a cult of death, but let me ask you about other people's concerns about transhumanism or about artificial intelligence. We talked during the break briefly about Hugo de Garis's book, The Ardalec War. He's concerned about it. He's certainly not a Christian. He believes that he's drawn. He's kind of on both sides of this. He's kind of drawn to creating something that he believes is going to destroy him and the human race. But he sees it as the fact that he's going to be creating some kind of a godlike intelligence that he believes will turn on humans. And nevertheless, he's drawn to do that. So he's kind of on both sides, but overall he tends to go towards that. So he would have issues with some of the artificial intelligence.
No, and I think artificial intelligence is something that is very dangerous. In fact, I'm also the creator of this concept called theicidism, which is this idea that God may have existed as some superintelligence, but then ended up killing itself, or, you know, just essentially becoming nothing in a way to give the rest of the world free will. And we may now be living in a universe that is a hologram. Anyways, there's a lot of philosophy and physics that are starting to lead to some of these crazy concepts. And, you know, Hugo de Garis, when he talks about some of the worries between artificial intelligence and normal people, he's 100% right, because we are facing this incredible challenge. How far do we let an intelligence grow beyond our own capacities? And once it does it even need us around? I'm not a big fan of AI. I'm actually, I want to spend a lot of money for research for AI to help the world, but I don't want an intelligence smarter than me on planet Earth. That's just not what
I think it's going to get out of control far sooner than that, because I think even before you get something that is a self-aware general intelligence, far before that, you're going to have autonomous killing machines that are created by DARPA and others. And that brings us to, how do you control this type of thing? Isaac Asimov had his three laws of robotics, that a robot couldn't injure a human being. It had to take orders, and then it had to protect its existence as long as that didn't conflict with the first two orders. You have your own kind of three laws of transhumanism. A transhumanist must safeguard one's own existence above all else. How does it seem, if that's the primary law, it seems to me like an artificial intelligence or a transhumanist, that would be a prescription for conflict, a prescription for unending conflict, if it's going to be that egocentric.
No, and let me state that the book is both, you know, the book where it starts with the three laws in the very first lines is both a warning and an inspiration of the future. And I think the three laws of transhumanism, they're certainly not a part of my campaign, because there's no way you could run a government with the first law. But you need to be more communal. You need to care about the people. You need to, be out for your own tribe, your own country. But the three laws were really designed to have philosophers and readers explore what kind of age we're going to be entering when you talk about machine intelligence, when you talk about intelligence that may think more robotic-like. It may not have mammalian feelings, which is love, tenderness, you know, our mothers and our fathers. It may just be like, you know, I'm out for my own good. So the three laws were written as a challenge. How far do we take these laws? I've often said that the three laws of transhumanism are going to be embraced by artificial intelligence, but not by human beings.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like if they were to embrace that, we would have the artificial intelligence that Hugo de Garis is concerned about, that it would put its existence above everything else. The second law would be that it would achieve omnipotence as exponentially as possible, expediently as possible, and it may be exponential as a matter of fact. Talk about that. Why? What is that about? Why would it want to? What would the second thing to be achieve omnipotence? That sounds like it would be dominating, not only egocentric but megalomaniacal as well.
Well, you know, I mean, when you talk about what transhumanists are after, they're after a perfect state of health. They're after a kind of a state of being that nobody can tear down. And, you know, that's virtually synonymous with omnipotence. But at the same time, I don't think it's omnipotence in the egocentric way that most transhumanists are after. What they're really after is just saying, you know, I now have perfect health and nobody can take it away from me. Perhaps if we lived in some type of perfect libertarian society where that was achieved, that would be perfect. Then we wouldn't have to use the word omnipotence. Maybe there's a better word than that. But the way the three laws are structured is they're structured sort of that it would be an artificial intelligence or some type of super being that would achieve this omnipotence. And that's why it would try to become God. Now, again, this doesn't work at all for a political platform, and it's not part of my political platform, but it is certainly worth exploring as people decide how far they want to take technology. Again, it's all part of the transhumanist wager. How far do you go to make that transhumanist wager? Do you go to try to become God? Do you go to try to conquer death? Do you go to really reverse the natural course of the human being? And I think that's a choice every single person is going to have to make in the 21st century as technology advances.
Yeah, that's why I was looking at the three laws of transhumanism as you posit them out there to try to get an understanding of what your philosophy was about. And I guess let's look at the third one. I'll get you to comment on this. What does it mean to safeguard value in the universe? So, whose value?
The third one is the good one. The third one means safeguard everyone, your life, my life, my family's life, my children's life. Safeguard means taking care of anything that has value, including the environment, including other people that we've never met before, including other star systems if we feel that's beneficial for the universe. So the third one is really the humanitarian one or the mammalian one, where we go out of our way to protect people and society and civilization.
It almost seems like it's taken Asimov's laws and inverted them in a very dangerous way.
You're not the first to say that. That's
definitely okay. True. We're going to be right back. We're talking to Zoltan Isfahan, transhumanist candidate for president. And he's on his way to Washington to deliver a bill of rights for transhumanists. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host, and joining me in studio is Zoltan Isfahan, an American writer, futurist, philosopher, and transhumanist. He's the creator of the Transhumanist Party. He is on his way to Washington with a transhumanist bill of rights. We've talked about that a little bit. I've been talking to him about the transhumanist philosophy. We're going to get back to that. I want to find out about his opinion of intelligence transference, as Ray Kurzweil is pinning his hopes that he's going to transfer himself into some kind of a mechanical body at some point. Before we do, real quickly, I want to let you know about the specials. We have 15% off of Ancient Defense for a limited time at InfoWarsLife.com. We also have 10% off of the complete InfoWars Select Storable Food Line with free shipping. That is a huge savings. That is a savings, free shipping. You get that regardless of the quantity of storable food that you select. So if you get a large quantity, like 1 year's worth of storable food, that is a huge, huge savings. 10% plus free shipping on select storable food at InfoWars Select Storable Food. Zoltan, when we look at this, and I've seen Ray Kurzweil talk many times about transferring himself into some kind of an artificial body at some point in time. I look at this and I was like, well, my opinion of that would be, well, assuming that all of this stuff was there, you might be able at very best to make an exact replica of yourself, but it wouldn't be you, in my understanding of it. I mean, what do you think? I mean, I look at this and this fundamentally gets down to what your understanding is of what a human being is. Are we merely a consciousness? Are we merely a mind? Are we merely a physical construct? Or is there a soul?
Well, you know, I don't believe in a soul, but I believe that if you were to transfer my exact ingredients of who I am directly into a machine, at least for a single instant, it would be exactly me. Now, there might be two of me exactly at the same moment, but, you know, then a few seconds later, you know, history and nature and all these other things start happening, you get new experiences, then it becomes somebody different, but it's very close. So I'm a believer in life extension using mind uploading as one means of conquering death. It's not ideal. What would be ideal is for me to never lose my consciousness as I am right now and to maybe transfer myself into something where I'm in a robotic body, but it's perhaps I always have my brain intact somehow like that. But mind uploading is probably going to be the one that might work in terms of getting us to do things like space travel and getting us to do things like going off into total different areas of human existence that we've never been. I mean, imagine if you're living in a computer, we have five senses right now with our human body. In a computer, you might have 500 senses. Experience, reality could be something incredibly different and very exciting potentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very excited about living forever. Quite frankly, I'm a Christian. So I think that I'm going to get a spiritual body. And I think that's going to be something that is beyond anything that I can comprehend. And so I'm quite confident I'm going to get that. Actually, it's a confident expectation of that. And again, I guess it comes back to where you think we are in terms of a person. You know, when Hugo de Garis created his artificial brain project, it was kind of a field of dreams approach. In other words, if he could reconstruct the human brain accurately enough, he believed that consciousness would come, you know, like the field of dreams. I built this thing and it's, just, you know, it'll just flow into that. And so I guess when I look at that, I just never really bought that, because to me, there has to be something else there. There has to be something else to our existence that creates that consciousness other than just all of the physical components that are there. And I want to give you time to answer that. We're going to keep Zoltan Isfahan for another segment coming up right after the break. We're out of time on this segment, but we're going to be right back with Zoltan Isfahan, and we're going to get your answer on that. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host, and we have with us, we're holding over to this segment, Zoltan Isfahan, the transhumanist, and I posed a question to Zoltan that he didn't have a chance to answer in the last segment. So we're going to get that answer. And again, basically what I was asking you, Zoltan, was do you believe that, what is your basic philosophy in terms of constitutes us, okay? Like we're talking about the idea that if you build an exact replica of the brain, that the consciousness would come. And I said, I believe that there's something more to that. Your response?
Sure. Well, a lot of transhumanists believe in mind uploading, where you just upload your consciousness into a machine, and that's you. And, you know, I think a lot of people ask, well, is that really you? And this kind of gets into a great philosophical debate of materialism versus kind of spirituality. A Christian would say, well, you know, after death, or it's Jesus or God that takes them to a new place, and they have their self. But you have to ask yourself, well, how does that actually happen? Well, when scientists talk about mind uploading into a machine, they're talking about that same kind of philosophical jump, except instead of into a spiritual world, they're talking more into a material world of data, of bits. And we've already had quite a bit of success, actually, in the last 2 years with telepathy. About 18 months ago, between France and India, they had mind-reading headsets where people were able to say things to each other's minds without actually speaking out loud. And now they're doing all sorts of tests with this type of technology where you can think thoughts, you read the brainwaves through the EEG technology, and then you can hear it in you can hear someone saying these things to you, but it's just telepathy. This is how we're going to do mind uploading. We're going to use those algorithms, except much more complex, you know, a billion times over, and put a human brain into a machine that can think and feel and hopefully act identically to who we are.
And that's what concerns me. As Eric Schmidt said with Google, he said, we're going to get that technology just over the creepy line, okay? When you start reading people's minds, to me, the potential for abuse, and of course, this is something going back to the history of DARPA, this is something that they've been working on from the very inception of the agency, to try to either physically do that or to try to infer that by watching everything that you do, coming up with predictive algorithms to try to monitor and predict your behavior and then control your behavior, because they're not just curious as about what you want to do. They want to control that. So that's one of the things that concerns me so much about all this technology, is the vast potential for abuse and where much of this research is coming from.
And when young transhumanists ask me, what field should I go into? I always tell them security, because security for the thing that you're worried about is perhaps going to be the biggest field of economy coming in the future. We need to protect ourselves with this incredible technology we're going to have from abuse from government, abuse from hackers, abuse from individuals, even abuse from people that may love us and can do things. I mean, now wives and husbands can follow each other, and we have drones following us and stuff like that. So this field of making sure that we retain our civil liberties in the area of 21st century technology is going to be the most important field going forward.
Yeah, exactly. And when we look at things like self-driving cars, the potential for making us passive spectators, controlled passive spectators in our own environment. As we were talking about this during the break, I said, transhumanism to me looks like traditional humanism, atheistic, secular, materialistic. It seems to me like it's kind of interesting. We see transgenderism and all these other things. It seems to me that many of these futurists, like Ray Kurzweil, really identify with being a machine more than they do with being a human, right? And so they're coming at this from this atheistic, humanistic, desiring to be a machine type of perspective. Your comments?
Well, I do want to point out that there's a growing field of religious transhumanists out there that are merging their spiritual ideas, their biblical ideas, with transhumanism. And I think that is definitely going to be the future, as you find a lot younger religious-minded people saying, I'm also open to technology. But yeah, right now it is a very materialistic and kind of secular-minded movement. And I think it makes it easier, if you're a secularist, to embrace this type of radical technology, to go forward without a soul and to go forward as somebody who is just willing to be on their own in the universe.
Yeah, that's fundamentally the difference in how we see the world. Christians would see it as a metaphysical universe, and secularists would see it as strictly physical. Thank you so much for joining us, Zoltan Isfahan. Been an interesting discussion. We'll be right back with the fourth hour. Leanne McAdoo will be hosting.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. You are now entering the fourth hour, Overdrive. I'll be your host, Leanne McAdoo. We got a great jam-packed fourth hour for you today. Emmy Robin will be joining me in studio at about 2:30. We're going to take your calls, talk about our experience with the Liver Shield cleanse. A lot of people were very excited to hear about our experience. We'll also be showing you some before and after photos. Mine is kind of a before and almost finished, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But first, I wanted to talk about some of these articles that are up. Now, this is from BuzzFeed. The World Health Organization has just decided that bacon and sausages do cause cancer after all. Now, they are reclassifying processed meats into group one carcinogenic to humans. That means there is sufficient evidence in humans that eating large quantities raises the risk of bowel cancer. Red meat has been classified as probably carcinogenic. Now, they are saying, that doesn't mean that you have to entirely stop eating meat. This isn't the big Agenda 21 push to make you stop eating meat. But they are saying that your individual risk increases with the amount of meat that you consume. Here's another story that might gross you out. Your vegetarian hot dog meat might contain human DNA. So this is a food watchdog group, Clear Food. They looked at 345 hot dog samples from 75 brands, including meat-based and meat-free Franks. Of those 345 hot dogs, 14.4% had some sort of issue. Some dogs were labeled pork-free, which is important, of course, if that's your religious criteria, but they were found to contain pork after all. And even grosser, 2% of all samples were found to have traces of human DNA in them. Veggie dogs were the worst off, accounting for 67% of the hygiene issues and 2/3 of the human DNA found. So that's pretty gross. Thank goodness I cannot eat veggie hot dogs as a vegetarian. It's too high of gluten for me. It really hurts my stomach. But I wanted to talk about those stories because, like I mentioned in some of the videos that Emmy, Robin, and I shot with this Liver Shield cleanse, I would say the most important product that we sell here, that if you want to just purchase something, if that's all you can afford, go for the Oxy powder. You've got to cleanse that gut bacteria. You've got to clean yourself out. It's like key for optimal health is to have your gut bacteria in order. And to honor our completion of the Liver Shield cleanse, that we're, of course, running a special right now. The Advanced Liver Cleanse Pack is on sale. Liver Shield is back in stock. Obviously, we keep selling out a Liver Shield with every run and for very good reason. And now I can attest to that. I can speak on my own personal experience. So try Liver Shield. Learn about how to perform this Liver Shield flush at InfoWarsLife.com. And again, this is a limited run. We're probably going to sell out of this again. Now, joining me in studio is Rob Dew, and we're going to talk about the cesspool of corruption within, you know, this vaccine cover-up. So over the weekend, U.S. citizens marched on the CDC headquarters in Atlanta to protest vaccine science corruption. So what do you think? Is this finally, are we pushing back against this ultimate push for mandatory vaccines?
Right. Well, it looks like right now the vaccine cover-up is imploding in Congress. And this is a CDC protest. This was done in Atlanta, led by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's been very outspoken against vaccines, and which is great to see, you know, somebody like that. And he's not necessarily, a lot of the people are against these vaccine schedules and the ingredients in them. They're not necessarily against vaccines, you know, at least they say, but they're against them the way they're being done right now.
Right.
So there was a big gathering. Some of the doctors or some of the people that were speaking on there, they were going to have Congressman Bill Posey was going to be there, who's been speaking out in Congress. And then here's an interesting person, Dr. Judy Mikovits. She was the author of Plague and a 20-year veteran researcher of the National Cancer Institute, that she had her research destroyed for uncovering the hidden truths behind autism, chronic fatigue syndrome, human retroviruses, and others. So It's good to see, you know, people getting out, protesting at the CDC, because that's where a lot of that vaccine data comes from, that pro-vaccine data.
Well, they were also trying to say, hey, whatever happened to your senior scientist, Dr. William Thompson,
exactly,
who publicly admitted
fraud? I was going to get to Dr. Thompson, because he's another guy who's pro-vaccine, but he saw this cover-up happening where they skewed data with the MMR vaccine and showing basically that young African-American boys had a higher risk of getting autism after getting the MMR. And they skewed that data by claiming these kids were adopted or they didn't have parents. So
they were changing
the groupage that way. So,
hey, to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. But getting back to Bill Posey, he actually went on the floor of Congress and said, we need to look at Dr. Thompson's remarks. We need to look at his research because there is a cover up. And it was, you know, publishing the information about the MMR, which is measles, mumps, and rubella. Of course, we had that big measles scare, and I'm going to get to a little bit of that, you know, in a second. But that's good that Dr. Thompson or that Bill Posey, a representative from Florida, is speaking out against it. And he said this: considering the nature of the whistleblower's documents, he's talking about Dr. Thompson, as well as the involvement of the CDC, a hearing and a thorough investigation is warranted. So I ask, Mr. Speaker, I implore my colleagues of the Appropriations Committee to please take such an action, Posey said from the floor. It is my duty that the documents Dr. Thompson provided are not ignored, Posey said from the floor Tuesday, delivering nearly the same remarks in a speech several weeks ago. So that pushback is starting to happen, that and with other parents, and people are going to start standing up with this SB 277.
Right.
But there's another bill coming down the pike. Now, here's a couple articles from Forbes that I also wanted to get to. And these are kind of, you know, vaccine skeptic hit pieces. One, they're talking about former Representative Dan Burton, who used to get on the floor and talk about the link between autism and vaccines. And now he's being paid as a lobbyist, which is not odd for a congressman to then become a lobbyist, definitely for the other side of Big Pharma. But the Citizens Commission on Human Rights. Now, who is this? This is a group funded by the Scientologist. So then they take that, and actually the Citizens Commission on Human Rights does have some valid points against over-medication, especially with mind-altering drugs. They say there's way too much of them. That's probably something we should look at, because a lot of these people who are going out and shooting people happen to be on these SSRIs.
Right.
So they are against that type of stuff, and a lot of psychiatry, they're very against that. So he's with that group, so they spend time attacking him. And then they came out with one of his Back to the Future Day last week on, I guess, Friday or Thursday. It was, you know, Marty McFly went back to that date or went forward in time. So they have this conversation between Marty and Doc, and Marty's talking about the flu shot, Doc. They're giving it out of pharmacy now. And the Doc's like, oh, yes, vaccines are now easier to get. And they just talk about how great it is now that the shot schedule has been increased. You know, because he only got 8 shots and now there's 15.
Oh, it's so great.
And the doc is just saying, science hadn't advanced far enough, Marty. It's amazing what strides scientists have made. So just these two articles from Forbes, I just, you know, people need to look out for this stuff, because they're always putting out any type of pro-vaccine propaganda they can just to get people in the door to get these things. But here's something people need to look out for on a nationwide level, not just SB 277, which was the California legislation that eliminated the personal belief. So you can't opt out of vaccines anymore if you want to put your kids in a public or private school. They covered everything.
Right.
Now there's going to be HR 6, which is called the 21st Century Cures Act. Oh, incidentally, today was the day back, I think in 2003 or four, George Bush signed the Patriot Act.
Oh, I love
so, this. You know, the very unpatriotic Patriot Act.
Double speak.
Anyway, this is a 362-page bill that mandates $9 billion be given to the National Institute for Health to develop more drugs and vaccines, and $550 million be given to the FDA to fast-track products to market. It was like our transhumanist guest was saying today, we need to get rid of the FDA so we could get more drugs to market quicker. But the reason they have those loose regulations anyway, that they pay off all the time, you know, there's always loopholes that these guys can go through, is so that there is some checks and balance, which I think we need. And we've never done placebo testing with vaccines. We just look for antibodies. So when they inject it into you, they test your blood and they go, oh, you've got antibodies now for the disease. That means you're building an immunity. But what it is your body fighting back against adjuvants like aluminum and mercury being injected into your body. And it's going, wait a minute.
Right. And your newborn baby.
And your newborn, yeah.
They're actually pushing for mothers to, you know, just hold off on breastfeeding while we're giving you the vaccines. You know, your kids don't need that good mother's milk. They need the vaccines.
Well, and some of the vaccines they're looking at to come out with it. One for HIV/AIDS, which I think will increase HIV/AIDS rates, in my personal opinion. Chlamydia, hepatitis C, genital herpes, syphilis, gonorrhea, E. coli, norovirus, tuberculosis. A lot of these diseases they're sexually transmitted diseases, but they're also hygiene diseases, you could say. Even, you know, you get to E. coli, norovirus, and tuberculosis. A lot of those are from dirty areas. And a lot of we don't see a lot of these diseases, except you're now seeing like a rise in gonorrhea and syphilis and chlamydia in senior citizen populations.
Wow. Well, that's thanks to Viagra and the Tinder app, I hear.
Probably
people are getting around.
But this article that came out at the end of September by David Adams, who's a doctor, he said, be skeptical about vaccination claims. And he makes some very interesting points, one of which is from 1900 to 1965, measles deaths had already decreased 99%. 65 was when the vaccine was introduced. And from 1900 to 35, pertussis deaths had already decreased 82%. So these things were already on their way out when they told you we needed them. That was from the Union. Mm-hmm. And then 30% of the measles cases from that Disneyland outbreak were from vaccinated kids.
Right.
They were found in vaccinated
kids. You're not
kids,
allowed to talk about that.
Which they don't tell you about that.
I think that's racist of you to talk
and
about
then,
facts.
Of the 8,200 pediatric pertussis cases reported in California in 2014, 90% had been vaccinated.
Right.
Okay, and they want to talk about herd immunity, and you have to get these. And the CDC admits that over the last 10-plus years, there have been no deaths from measles in the United States, but 108 deaths from the measles vaccine itself.
Wow.
And 2,000 people disabled.
And isn't it funny how this country has such a love affair with the Kennedy family, except for when one of them wants to actually speak out against
vaccine. Right. As long as they're pulling the status quo or being used to justify closing down a park on the 50th anniversary of someone's death to, you know, inhibit free speech, then it's okay.
Right.
Yeah. But they don't like this at all. And this is from Dr. David Adams, PhD, who lives in Penn Valley, Pennsylvania. He also said, childhood diseases seem to play a beneficial role in maturing the child's immune system. A 2015 study found that those who had measles and mumps, children suffered less heart attacks and less strokes later.
Wow.
So natural immune system is doing its job.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah.
Well, vaccine skeptics could finally be taken seriously if Congress will do its job. Now, we'll be right back. Emmy Robin will be joining me in studio to take your phone calls. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I am Leanne McAdoo, hosting this fourth hour of Overdrive. Now, Emmy Robin is going to be joining me coming up. We're going to be taking your phone calls. So if you want to go ahead and get in line with your questions specifically related to the Liver Shield Cleanse, the number to call is 1-800-259-9231. So we'll be taking your calls here in just a minute. Now, in 2008, we had one of the worst financial crises happen here globally. Essentially, U.S. and the Congress gave the American banks a $700 billion TARP bailout at the expense of taxpayers. No bankers have even been charged with the crime in that relating to the collapse. Virtually no regulation of the banks. And they're still pulling in record profits. But that's pretty much the opposite of what Iceland did. And they've actually gone on and jailed even more bankers. And these are not your low-level traders. These are CEOs. So we're going to go ahead and play a report now by John Bowne, Jail the Bankers. Of course, if we jail the bankers, this whole house of cards would fall down.
74 combined years in prison. That's how Iceland's Supreme Court and the Reykjavik District Court respond to those responsible for Iceland's financial collapse. This brings the total to 26 bankers now behind bars in Iceland, with most being CEOs of large financial institutions rather than low-level traders. Most of those jailed will serve terms of 2 to 5 years, according to a report by Iceland Magazine, which notes that 3 executives at Landsbankinn and 2 at Kaupthing, along with 1 prominent investor, have been prosecuted. Their crimes include market manipulation, embezzlement, and breach of fiduciary duties. Their market manipulation destroyed the country's economy, and to this day, Iceland is still having to repay the global loan sharks at the IMF, as well as governments of other countries, which kept the nation operating. Iceland Magazine explains that rather than protect and reward the very institutions responsible for the collapse and the blood-sucking vermin that run them, the Icelandic government let them collapse and then created a financial supervisory authority to strictly oversee the banks. Iceland's president Grimson noted, "Why are the banks considered to be the holy churches of the modern economy? Why are private banks not like airlines and telecommunication companies and allowed to go bankrupt if they have been run in an irresponsible way? The theory that you have to bail out banks is a theory that you allow bankers enjoy for their own profit, their success, and then let ordinary people bear their failure through taxes and austerity. People in enlightened democracies are not going to accept that in the long run." Iceland's President Grimson explained their strategy. "We were wise enough not to follow the traditional prevailing orthodoxies of the Western financial world in the last 30 years. We introduced currency controls. We let the banks fail. We provided support for the poor, and we didn't introduce austerity measures like you're seeing in Europe. While the country's economy is far from what it once was, it has stabilized and is in a position to recover. Meanwhile, the governments of the U.S. and Europe bailed out most of those responsible for playing a direct role in the financial crisis that crippled the global economy."
Come on, get up! Make the first move! It's my show! Make the first move! Yeah, get up! Get up off your butt!
You think I'm
go ahead, stand up! Stand up! Come on! Stand up!
Yeah!
Don't you understand?
The U.S. Congress gave American banks a $700 billion TARP bailout at the expense of the taxpayers. Not one banker in the U.S. has even been charged with a crime relating to the financial collapse. There is still virtually no regulation of the banks, and they are pulling in a near record $160 billion in annual profits, all from money created out of thin air. The Department of Justice, under Holder and now Lynch, continues to pretend to do the hard work associated with reining in financial criminal banking institutions laundering drug cartel money. But fines and even penalties don't send the message that the banksters received in Iceland. Jail the bankers, the ones at the top, and free the taxpayers. It may be the most important meme the people of the United States could ever support. Jailing the bankers would bring the New World Order down like a house of cards.
We have a large house blend, please.
All right, let me get that for you.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely one.
I gotta ask you this. It's just a matter of national security. I'm an important person now. Is there a reason you're paying with cash?
I don't understand how that's any of your business.
I have a couple 20s here, so I'm just gonna give you a 20.
Is that cool?
Oh my God, they're everywhere. Oh, they're everywhere. Oh, hold on. I gotta get myself together. I'm Jack
John Bowne for Infowars.com.
And that's how it is here in America. They're just too big to jail, just like Lois Lerner, Miss I Plead the Fifth, is also, you know, they're not going to jail her either. They said, yeah, you know, they did some wrongdoing there, but bad behavior isn't a crime. Of course, if it was, our entire Congress would be in prison. So there you go. All right, well, we'll be right back with Emmy Robin taking your phone calls on the Liver Shield Cleanse.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. This is the fourth hour overdrive. I'm your host, Leanne McAdoo. What a tremendous show we had today. I can't believe we had an actual transhumanist in the studio. It's always good to get, you know, some different opinions on the way the world should be headed. So that was quite interesting. And now Emmy Robin is joining me in studio. We're going to go ahead and take some of your phone calls. The number to call is 1-800-259-9231. So we'll be taking your phone calls in just a minute. Now, before the break, I mentioned that we are hoping to show you our before and afters. If not, we're going to go ahead and tweet them out later. And I also mentioned that mine are kind of a before and almost after. I'm almost finished because, you know, I almost derailed this entire process last night by not following Dr. Group's directions. We'll get to that in a minute. I wanted to let everybody know this cleanse is on sale right now. The Liver Shield is on sale. The pack itself is on sale with the Advanced Liver Cleanse Pack with the Oxy Powder and the Liver Shield. The Oxy Powder itself is on sale. So go ahead to the InfoWars store and pick some up today. I'm telling you, this is powerful. I felt amazing this entire week. It was not as hard as I thought that it was going to be. And they are right now highlighting this Dr. Group's 6-day liver cleanse instructions. Please follow the instructions. I tried to sub them a little bit when we get to the salt flush. So, Emmy, we'll go ahead and start talking about that right now. So what I did is you're supposed to get Epsom salt, and we couldn't find it. We were looking, and the only thing they had was the Epsom salt that you bathe in. So it had lavender and honey and, you know, all of these ingredients. And we're like, I'm not going to ingest that.
That's confusing.
So we subbed it out with, did you use Himalayan sea salt as well?
I used Celtic sea salt because when I do the master cleanse, which I do quite a bit, you flush every morning, and yeah. I use Celtic sea salt with that. But you drink it with a lot more water.
You do a lot more salt and a lot more water than what is recommended on Dr. Group's instructions. And I got to say, Dr. Group was pretty disappointed this morning when I talked to him and told him that I didn't follow his instructions. And the reason why he uses the Epsom salt specifically is because Himalayan salt or Celtic sea salt or something like that you could actually put on your food, it's a different salt compound. So it's got magnesium and things like that that your body will absorb because, you know, it's salt that you can eat. Whereas with the Epsom salt, it's a different kind of compound. So even if you're just using that 1 tablespoon of Epsom salt with 8 ounces of water, your body will flush it out. It will react to it because it's like, whoa, this is not salt that I should be ingesting. So we didn't do our diary yesterday specifically because it was flush day. And I got to say, that was my least favorite part of this cleanse was doing the salt. And 3/4 of a cup of olive oil.
Oh. Did you put a tiny bit of orange juice in it, though?
I did. Okay. Your suggestion.
That does help. It just a little bit, though.
Tell us what you told me how to do it, because it did make it palatable. I did it, but it was horrendous.
So I prefer doing the olive oil, sipping it through a straw, because, I mean, when you're trying to physically chug olive oil, I mean, it's a thicker substance.
And you also put it in the refrigerator.
Yeah, I put it in the refrigerator in the morning because I knew that I was going to drink it that night. And then I just add, like, you know, maybe a little less than a shot glass full of orange juice into it, mix it, and then I plug my nose. Even with the saltwater flush, you need to plug your nose because if you have any kind of gag reflex, it will kick in.
I just kept saying, I'm a mermaid.
So I plug my nose and just take a straw and sip it down, you know, and the second you let go of your nose, you're going to taste the olive oil. I mean, olive oil isn't a pleasant taste in the raw, but.
And I love olive oil, but I don't want any.
But again, that, I mean, Group is right. I mean, that if you can keep it in for that 8 hours and lay on your side for that 30 minutes, it's going to oil pull and it's going to pull the toxins out of your liver. And you do feel it. Did you not start to feel sick?
Absolutely. Well, as soon as I took the olive oil, you're supposed to immediately go lay down on your right side, pull your knees to your chest. And I heard it. It was like, like little sort of popping sounds just starting to come out of wherever. And I felt it flowing through my intestines. But I also felt like I was on my deathbed because I was basically ODing on sodium. And that is why my before and afters are not necessarily before and after. I took so much salt that I woke up this morning and I was really bloated. And needless to say, I'm experiencing the flush today. So now we're going to go ahead and take some of your phone calls. I want to go ahead and talk to Chandler in Oklahoma. Go ahead.
Hello, Leanne. Nice to talk to you.
Hi there.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
You're live.
I just had to ask that because nearly every caller asks that. But anyways, I'm 23 years old. I'm a construction worker. I wrestled in high school. I played basketball competitively. And by no means am I out of shape or overweight. But I found myself getting kind of fogged down midday, framing houses. Mm-hmm. And I decided to do the liver cleanse. I did a liver cleanse, and it just gave me... I found myself taking energy drink, having energy drinks midday and not even bad energy drinks, supplemental energy drinks. But after the cleanse, I absolutely did not have any fogginess during the day. I felt great after the cleanse. And if they're a little overweight or if they have an inside job where they're not as active, they're not doing, I mean, I feel like.
That's when it's absolutely going to get backed up there because you're not moving around. And in humans, we're not meant to be sitting around all day. We're meant to be getting a little bit of physical activity. You're absolutely right about that. What was your diet like before you did the cleanse?
My diet, I had a good diet throughout high school. Like I said, I'm 23, so I kind of dropped out of that diet and I never drink pop. I always drink water. I kind of watch what I eat throughout the week so I don't feel bad, but
did you find yourself like not craving greasy stuff after the cleanse? Like you were craving the healthy stuff afterwards because your body wants it?
Oh yeah. It gave me an extreme amount of mental motivation to continue eating healthy, to not eat greasy food, not eat junk food.
Yeah.
Gave me an extraordinary amount of motivation to keep up with eating right, eating healthy.
Right.
After the cleanse, it was great. It was amazing. Just bought some more. I'm going to do a second cleanse because I heard Dr. Group just stress how important it is to do it a second time and a third time and just keep up the cleansing.
Wow, Chandler. Well, that is so awesome to hear. I'm glad that you had such tremendous results with this and that even after that salt flush and the olive oil experience, you're ready to do it again. Thank you, Chandler. Because Chandler's absolutely right. I feel the exact same way. It was so... The way that I felt during the cleanse and even now today, even after being, I think, literally on my deathbed last night, I feel great today. You feel lighter. Literally, our skin is glowing. I didn't even want to put makeup on today just to let everyone see that my skin is just, it's glowing, it's clear. Yeah. The mental clarity and, you know, is that why you've done so many cleanses?
Yeah, it all started, like I said, I started my very, very first time I attempted to cleanse, I started with one of the hardest ones, which was the master, obviously. But this one, I mean, if you are somebody out there and you are addicted to cleanses like I am, you know, I try to do them every 4 months. So 3 times a year, that's usually good. I mean, you build up a lot of the toxins from what they put in our foods and whatnot. So it's good to do it a couple of times a year. If you like cleanses, this is, I don't want to say it's easy to somebody who's never done one, but it definitely is easy if you are a cleanser. It's an easier cleanse to do.
Yeah. Well, this has been my very first cleanse. And
you did good.
It was, you know, obviously it's really good to have someone along for the ride, help keep you motivated, keep your mental constitution in check, you know, don't give up. So that was definitely very helpful. And it was an easy cleanse. I think a lot of that, what really helped is that I cut out cheese and wine, my favorite things, a few days beforehand. And I think that really helps to just kind of, so you're not, well, except for I did eat that piece of pizza for lunch.
But also, you know, what helps the most on this cleanse is those oxypowder pills. Like
yes,
I
absolutely
am addicted. I love the Oxypotter pills because they will do what a saltwater flush does to you, but they do it in a healthy way.
In a healthy way without that horrendous taste.
Yeah.
You're right.
I love the Oxypotter pills. So, I mean, and you don't want to obviously take those every day on a daily basis, but like if I go out on the weekend and, you know, I'm going to a barbecue and I'm drinking beer and this and that, and hey, let's say I have an audition the next day, I'm going to take some Oxypotter pills the night before and I'm going to, you know, lose that bloating and sodium bloating and all that bad stuff.
Well, everyone is always worried about putting on those winter pounds with Thanksgiving and Christmas. We're all worried about that. And that's, you're exactly right with the Oxypotter.
Yeah.
You kind of, it's kind of a cheat thing, but it is healthy. It's healthy for you and you've got to cleanse the stuff out of your gut. You know, like I said here, the World Health Organization is saying processed meats, sausages and bacon, causes cancer, bowel cancer. It's probably enough evidence, they say, it's probably carcinogenic, and it's based on how much meat you're putting in your body. And so many people eat tons of meat, way more than is recommended. So, and what people don't understand is that that can stay in your intestines for years.
Yeah, red meat and pork especially.
You'll never cleanse it out. And so that's why I recommend the Oxypotter above everything if that's where you got to start. But again, we are running a special on it. So now is the time to go ahead and try this liver cleanse pack because it is on sale. Now, we're going to go ahead and take some more calls. Let's talk to Antoine in California. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hey, you're live.
Yeah, I took the liver cleanse. I actually put it in some water and some olive oil and or olive oil or apple cider vinegar or whatever, and I took it for about 6 or 7 days. I wanted to make sure that what was coming out was going to be really soft. And so I took the olive oils, some oxy powder. The Epsom salt was pretty easy to take, and the olive oil to me was pretty easy to take too. And I didn't have like a gag reflex. And I think about half of it came out because I felt a lot come out, but it was pretty weird.
Yeah, it definitely feels weird. Thank you. So, Antoine, was it a success?
Yeah, it was a success. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so awesome. So thank you, Antoine. And that's how, what I got to say. I mean, I feel today, I mean, I could say that, yeah, there's some globules and things. It is real. It's real. Everything that people are telling you, it absolutely happens. And it will encourage you to continue eating healthy. At the very least, I'm going to be introducing that apple cider vinegar mixture and the lemon water in my daily routine because your body needs it. Now, I know a lot of people had questions on some of our videos. They were asking, I don't have a gallbladder. Can I still do this cleanse? And I asked Dr. Group about it, and he said, absolutely. If you've already gotten your gallbladder removed,
it's probably better because it'll help your liver.
Yes, it's going to help your liver because now your liver is having to work overtime in order to cleanse. And regardless of how you eat, you're constantly going to get fluoride in the water, tap water, the air that's around us, car, the fumes from automobiles. I mean, so everybody needs to do this at least once a year, I would say. Okay, let's go to Todd in Florida.
Hey, Todd.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I know you are. Hey, I did this about 8 months ago, and it was quite by accident. What I did was... Beyond Tangy Tangerine, I love that stuff. And because I'm 54 years old, I have the body of a Spartan.
If I do say so myself.
I would do my mix up my Beyond Tangy Tangerine with a quarter teaspoon of Himalayan salt and an ounce and a half of... the rags, and 4 teaspoons of sugar, because, I mean, that stuff, that mixture is kind of hard to choke down. And that was organic sugar, by the way. And all of a sudden, I'm noticing, I don't remember eating marbles.
Yeah.
Literally, there were hundreds of these things that I ejected. And it was awesome. I put the natron iodine in the mixture also.
Nice.
And like I said, I'm 54 years old. I used to weigh 200 pounds. So I weigh 140 now, and I feel fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow.
Especially since the liver cleanse.
Is really good to hear, Todd. I love hearing about so many people here educating themselves, doing it the right way, being healthy, and taking care of yourself before you have to go to the doctor that's going to want to do that extreme surgery. So, Todd, thank you so much. That's really great to hear. Now, if you want to see our before and after photos, I think they said they've got them ready.
No!
Like I said, mine are before and almost after because I'm not done with my flush. But you can see those if you go to Infowars.com/show. Whoa, Emmy,
I promise you, I was not sticking out in that first picture. I just literally was relaxed. And even in the second picture, I was relaxed. But like, it's crazy.
Look,
I can see my
cuts
back.
In your side.
No, I know. I can see the muscles in my stomach. It's nuts. And my legs, I feel like my legs look skinnier. I don't know. I started off at like for my height, I'm almost 5'9". So I started off at relatively healthy weight because I had done the liver cleanse in July, and then I went straight into working on a production for 3 months where I was working 18-hour days on my feet doing like 8 miles a day. So, I mean, I wasn't super out of shape, but when I started that first liver cleanse, I was pretty out of shape. So that before and after.
You said you're actually at the lowest weight of your... Well,
pretty much.
In a decade, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm almost back to where when I was a fitness model.
Do they have my before and almost afters? Or are we going to hold those off? Oh, my goodness gracious.
Holy moly, look at you. Yeah, I can see it in your arms for sure and your legs.
Well, where I really see it and where I really wanted it was in my sides. I guess you would call that the spare tire. And you can actually see where there's that little roll. Oh, my God, this is so embarrassing. There's that little roll kind of on the back fat. And you can see it's gone
look
away.
Look at your chin. Look below your chin, though.
Oh my gosh.
You see, you lose a little bit in your face too. That's where I saw it big time the first time around.
There you go, everyone. Before and afters. And like I said, mine is not even an after yet. I should probably take more pictures later when all the sodium has left my body.
Well, I wanted to address something that a lot of the skeptics on the cleanse talk about the globules and that being just the oil coming out. Because the first time I did the cleanse, I did the saltwater flush and globules
came out
like I'm talking good sized ones and the small sized ones, and they were the neon green. They looked exactly like the gallstones that group had, you know, and Googling pictures, they look exactly like the gallstones, and those came out before I even chugged the olive oil.
Right. And there you go. And it's the liver shield that actually helps to soften up the gallbladder, prepare you for that. Mm-hmm. So those globules can start coming out. And so there you go. It was before you even took the olive oil there for all you naysayers. But we also have some, you know, documentation that is the case as well. All right, Emmy, Robin, thank you so much. Now, you guys, stick around. We're going to be having Jakari Jackson come in to talk about what's going on the InfoWars Nightly News tonight. Emmy, why don't you stick around for the next 5 minutes?
Maybe.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. You're listening to the Fourth Hour Overdrive. I am Leanne McAdoo, joined by Emmy Robin and Jakari Jackson. Now, we were just talking about our before and after photos after enduring the liver shield cleanse for the last 6 days. I got to say, it was completely awesome until I OD'd on sodium last night. So, Jakari, you know, what do you think? You were here witnessing the ups and downs.
Well, the ladies seem a lot happier. They are, like Leanne said, their skin is glowing. They lost a little bit of weight. So not just on the outside, but on the inside as well. You know, that's one of the very important things the group always talks about. We always talk about cleansing the outside of our bodies to make sure your hair and makeup and all this stuff look nice. But to get the inside of your body cleaned out is, you know, something that's very important. And I definitely applaud you ladies for doing it because nobody else wanted to. So thank you for being the guinea pigs. And now that everybody can see the results, maybe more people will take a look into it.
Yeah, let's go ahead and put those before and after. I think you've got some more, some different angles. You guys, take it easy on me, all right?
Oh, wow.
It's so noticeable there. Your body just like flattened out because she did the cleanse properly last night. She's an advanced cleanser.
Look at these fitness and models here.
Now, Jakari,
oh man.
Jakari, I don't know if, I mean, it's, you like to fast pretty much every single month. And mm-hmm. I think you're, you know, obviously it's great physically, but more so you are looking into that spiritual aspect of it as well.
Right.
Which now I totally get it.
Yeah, I fast probably, you know, try to do a couple days a month. Ideally once a week, ideally being the key word. And I usually just go, you know, 24 hours or whatever, just drinking juice or water. And over this past weekend, I did do 2 days, but then we went out with Joe, one of our camera guys, and I ate a lot of stuff on his birthday. So
yeah.
I probably gained all that weight right back. But
I avoided that get together.
Yeah. Well, it was a good time. All in attendance had a great time. But, you know, as you were alluding to, it's not just for the physical aspects, but it's a spiritual as well. And it took me some getting used to because I used to eat a lot. I still do eat a lot. But, you know, coming from high school, you know, we worked out twice a day and all that stuff. I kind of kept that mentality. So to go just 2 days without food was really hard in the beginning, but you get used to it as time goes on.
Yeah, no, you absolutely do. And I get it now because I'm always giving you a hard time. I'm like, oh, you're not eating? Oh, my gosh. There's the before and after.
Oh, wow. Though.
You could see how bloated I was before. And that's why I was so unhappy with my midsection.
You don't have anything that hangs over the side in that.
I know. There's
awesome.
There's no more muffin top.
Look at you.
Yay.
But look at your face, too.
That's embarrassing still. All right. Well, Jakari, what's coming up on the news tonight?
Well, we'll take a look at maybe some more of these pictures of you.
No!
Ladies, we're also going to talk about all the things, the hot topics that are going on in the news. Don has a new article out about how a restaurant that recently got robbed is opening up, and they're giving a discount to concealed carriers.
Wow.
Because, you know, they want to make sure those type of things don't happen there. Again, also, we're going to look a little more in depth on the transhumanist issue. We had the guests on the show today, so we can go back and play some reports from the vault so everybody can get a real well-rounded look at the issue.
Right, yeah. We brought someone here with the transhumanist movement in who's very happy about where he thinks the world is headed and going along with that.
And also Joe Biggs is doing a new ad for the Hillary for Prison t-shirt, so you guys
go,
definitely
Biggs, go.
Want to check that out. He is like, you know, the like man for this.
Like he says, those shirts are selling out faster than Hillary Clinton. So
that's great. And also, I think Dew is still doing that thing. If you can get Hillary to sign the t-shirt or wear the t-shirt.
Yes.
I'll even put in, he put in $100. I'll put in $100.
Wow, $200.
Well. Yeah, we'll send you like t-shirts and stuff.
Signed by Hillary.
Yeah, it'll be more than $200. We'll give you something good, but just whoever gets it, just go ahead and keep going after it.
A free liver shield cleanse.
Yeah, well, don't throw that out there. All right, well, like I said, Liver Shield is back in stock. It's on sale, so get yours today. Experience the power of the cleanse. All right, tune in to InfoWars Nightly News tonight, 7 p.m. Central with Jakari Jackson.